The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis.
Here.
Mr. Kenwood.
Here.
Mr. Bondrack.
Here.
Mr. Schmidt.
Here.
Mr. Powell.
Here.
Mr. Black.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson.
Here. Any members of the public present who wish to address the board tonight? Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Cooper. I was here a couple months ago about the new board, the new teacher contract. Mm-hmm. Tonight I have brought some copies of recommendations that I have that I feel and people that I've talked with in the district feel should be looked at as points of change. So I've got a copy for each of the board members. And I do hope that the board members that are on the negotiating team will look seriously at this, and that way they will realize that this does represent the best interest of your stakeholders, which is the taxpaying public district 41. So I don't know.
You can pass them out. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Thank you very much. Any other members of the public? Thank you very much. Then we'll move on to recognition. I'll take that away from you, Madam President.
Thank you,
as you may or may not know, this is National School Board Members Recognition Day today, and so I have a proclamation I'd like to read on behalf of all of us for the board members. But before I do so, our board secretary, Maureen Stecker, is not here this evening. I wanted to recognize her as well, as while she's not a board member, she certainly is an integral part to the board team. Mm-hmm. However, Mrs. Stecker is not here, so I'd like to recognize Nancy Moak, who is in her stead taking notes and serving as board secretary, which is a function we all know that if we didn't have that role, we'd be picking up that piece, and so we're grateful for that role being taken. But in honor of the Board of Education, a proclamation. Whereas Board of Education members are unpaid volunteers elected to sit in trust for their diverse communities to meet expectations and aspirations for the public education of their children. And whereas Board of Education members are responsible for providing the leadership and vision that sets high standards and requires the effective operation of their school district. And whereas decisions made by Board of Education members directly impact the quality of life in their community. And whereas Board of Education members are entrusted with the guardianship and wise expenditure of scarce tax dollars and are responsible for maintaining and preserving the buildings, grounds, and educational quality of the district. And whereas Board of Education members are unstinting donors of their time, generous with their talents, and determined in pursuit of their goals. Therefore, be it proclaimed that in recognition of School Board Members Day on November 15th, this is actually November 14th, 2011, District 41 recognizes, honors, and thanks our Board of Education members for devoting so much to the community and to the education of its children. So, thank you, Board members. And just on a personal note,
say a few words.
You may.
Thank you, Mother. Oh.
I just want to say, beyond this, in a less formal way, that it's probably something that the community in general doesn't appreciate because it can't know the amount of hours, the amount of time, the amount of commitment and energy, and sincere desire that you bring to your conversations, that you bring to the work that you do in between board meetings. And how seriously you take the task and the commitment of serving your community and the children of this community. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, presentations, reports, and initiative updates. Okay, we have several presentations this evening, and usually we would begin with our school presentation, but we are going to wait and do our school presentation second because we're still expecting one more member of the team to join. You're here. Would you like to go first? Would you prefer going first? Okay. Mike, do you mind?
Oh, wait.
No.
Here, just not in the room.
Okay. Mike, are you okay with going second for your presentation? Okay. Thank you. We would normally do this in this order, but we have our PMA presentation, which will also be taking place, and then our levy presentation for the upcoming levy. But this evening, Forrest Glenn is going to really do a twofold presentation. First, as a continuing part of our theme of helping board members understand the professional learning communities that we are building as part of the District 41 culture. They're going to share their journey and where they are in that PLC journey. And then we have a special presentation to join them, which we haven't done yet, and that is to hear from a district group, and that would be our elementary music teachers, who are here this evening to add to the PLC journey and talk about what it means for a district team that doesn't have the benefit of meeting every day with its colleagues in their building. So we have two presentations wrapped into one.
Okay, so we want to welcome everyone tonight to Forrest Glenn. Our BLT wanted to share with all of you our journey as a professional learning community. Rena Mulligan, Jackie Carapel, and I represent members of our BLT and the Forrest Glenn staff tonight as we share our journey. Part of being a PLC is to write your mission, vision, and collective commitment statement as a staff, and we wrote ours back in the spring of 2010. Our mission statement at Forrest Glenn is that we believe that all individuals can and will learn in an environment that meets their academic, social, physical, and emotional needs. We accept the responsibility to encourage and challenge all students so that they can attain their maximum potential, and we embrace the future with optimism. Forrest Glenn's collective commitments, we have several of them, and they are posted in each of our classrooms. But the one that I feel that sums it up as a whole is that we will work together to develop instructional strategies to help all students learn. Our vision is to imagine, believe, and achieve. This is mentioned every day at the end of our morning announcements. And our mission, vision, and collective statement on commitments, as I stated, are posted somewhere throughout the building and every classroom. At Forrest Glenn, we focus on learning by asking the four critical questions. What is it that we expect the students to learn? How will we know what when they have learned it? And how will we respond when they do not learn? And then also, how will we respond when they already know the material? Mm-hmm.
I'm going to speak about grade level teams, and this is not just grade levels, we all get together, but also department teams get together. So it's more than just grade levels in this. But each team or department comes up with their own norm. We also identify essential learning outcomes. We create common formative assessments. We have a lot of formative assessments already. It's an ongoing thing. We are continuing to add more and trying to come up with a better ways to do it. Flexible grouping of students for intervention or enrichment based on assessments. We really want to emphasize flexible because the students are in constant flux. 1 week they're with the stars, and next week they're struggling a little. So we want to constantly regroup them to make sure we're hitting them exactly where they need to be. We progress monitor our students. Create agendas and assign roles for meetings. We find it more efficient if we come up with an agenda before our meeting. And then during our meeting, someone is taking notes, someone's monitoring to make sure we're following our norm. We meet weekly with our literacy coach, Stacy Bell, and biweekly with our math coach, Jean Kamilek. And that's due to she is split between Churchill and Forrest Glenn. And we meet monthly with Mr. Hornacek, and Stacy Stout, our literacy specialist, usually sits in on those meetings also, so we actually get to see her more than once. our targeted learning time. Forest Glen began 3 years ago with focusing on literacy and interventions and enrichment. Last year, some of our grade levels added math to this, and this year, many more grade levels have joined us, and some of those have been through guided reading and also our grade test, which is a new thing that we're learning this year ourselves. Jean Kamilic presented it at a staff meeting. We were the students, she was our teacher, so she really was hands-on. We got to experience what it's going to feel like in the classroom. And this year, grade levels are creating daily literacy and math interventions and enrichments. And again, these are stemming from our grade tests and through guided math, too.
Another part of our journey has been our work with our school improvement plan, and we're just updating that, so we're in about 110 pages right now with that. In the document, each grade level and each department have created action plans in reading, math, and writing that all feed into our main building goals, so it shows kind of what their part is for us to reach our building goals. Our local assessment data is reported each trimester to the BLT, and we just had our fall reporting out. So our fall local assessment data looks at the district writing assessment, beat the clock, which is fact fluency, math reading and math scores, and our Fondness and Pinnell benchmark assessment. And then our ISAC scores are analyzed daily. We are on track to meet our 2013 goals, our SMART goal. And in some cases, we've actually exceeded our SMART goal for 2015. And then we have a data wall meeting every other month. So grade levels meet with Stacy Scout, our literacy coach, and me. And we look at reading levels of our students. All students who are below grade level will get progress monitored just before that meeting, and then we meet at the wall, and it literally is a wall of data. Interventions for struggling readers are discussed, and then interventions and intervention groupings are adjusted if need be to meet the needs of the learners at that time. And all students reading below grade level will get daily guided reading and another dose during their targeted learning time. Okay, and at this time we'd like to highlight our music team as one that is a strong, developing professional learning community and kind of shows the direction we're all leading in. So, without further ado.
Thank you, Mary.
Hello, I am Robin Kimmel. Seriously, just read that. Teacher and choir director at Forest Glen. This is my second year here in District 41, and I'm very happy to share the curricular work that the music team has created during the past 2 years for grades K through 5. Please keep in mind that these documents are always going to be a work in progress, and that every time we meet, which is monthly, we update, revise, or change some part of the document. Tonight, I would like to share, these curriculum documents to keep you, the administration, the board, and the general public informed about the elementary program in District 41. This is the beginning of our PLC journey. This is, before I started here, they asked or inquired about getting a new curricular series for the music program, and very wonderfully, the school board, the Board of Education, agreed, and we were able to get a new textbook series for use at all four elementary schools. During this year, the music team began meeting on sit morning, and were able to look through that information and kind of sift through, and then in this year, we began looking for the essential outcomes. What exactly do we want all of our kids to know, mm-hmm. and what can we use that curriculum in order to establish that? Then, is that this year? Establish common essential outcomes, which is K through 4, and you'll see later in the presentation what we're doing for grade 5. We began linking common assessments to each desired concept. So we were writing together formative and summative assessments, rubrics, and things like that. In the beginning of this year,
We were lucky enough to hear, everybody in the district heard from Dr. Thomas Mamie at our Institute Day in August. He spoke about PLCs and how to make them work for our schools. The elementary music PLC does not meet weekly as the grade level teachers do, but we are very lucky to have PLC time once a month on the morning of 6 days. This time has been invaluable, and when we have done the bulk of our curriculum and assessment writing. The information is stored on the district's shared Y-Drive and can be viewed by any employee of the district so they can see what is being taught in each school. And this is what we're planning for. We currently serve K-5 with Forrest Glenn also teaching pre-K and early childhood music to preschool children. Each elementary teacher gives 2 grades a week, 1 work habits grade to each class every time they meet. And they also give a summative or formative assessment grade. We meet every month during this morning to revise our assessments and rubrics to make sure we're actually assessing the essential outcomes for each grade.
We've identified goals for each grade level and organized them by semester, by trimester for K-4 right now, and 5 is still under construction. We've developed common assessments that we use throughout the district for K-4 with rubrics and teacher pages, and this assures all of us that we are assessing the correct outcome and that we are doing it in a unified way. We've created grade 5 in the traveling guitar and world drum unit. These units travel from school to school, and kids really enjoy them a lot. And this is these are the national standards for music, singing, performing, improvising, composing, reading, notating, listening, analyzing, describing, evaluating, understanding relationships, and making connections. And this is how our textbook brings it all together. And we have tried to make sure that whatever we teach and the lessons that we teach are always aligned to the national standards, which are very stringent for our 20 minutes that we have for each grade level. And this is an example of third grade. We've identified the essential outcomes. We really only have 5, but that ensures us that we are really zeroing in on these. And this is the prior knowledge that the children need to know in order to create those essential outcomes.
This is an example of one of the documents that we created on our during our PLC time together. So this is our trimester 1 third grade plan. What we did was we went through our essential outcomes, and we identified concepts that we really wanted the students to achieve at each grade level each trimester. So what we did was we organized it by concept and then really broke it down into what particular part of that concept. So if, for example, for me, we want third grade students in first trimester to be able to identify all of those rhythms. And then we linked them to different lessons from the textbook series that accomplish that standard. We outlined the vocabulary that we could cover with those lessons. We've worked on creating common formative assessments to make sure that we're giving the students practice and we're giving them a variety of ways to show us that they're accomplishing the goal we've set for them. And then we created common summative assessments as well, and we've hyperlinked those into our document so that at any given time, like Robin said, this is all on the district drive, so we can access this at any time of the day. And this is a very much a living document. This changes every time we meet. So we always, you know, want to make sure that this is the most updated version. And this kind of allows us to, as we do meet at our PLC meetings, we bring back our results for these assessments, and we're able to kind of look at them, because this is still very much a work in progress. We're able to look at them, problem solve, and kind of troubleshoot some things. We can make revisions to the assessments themselves or help each other through how to help our students succeed. And then we always make sure that this is the most common or the most up-to-date version of our assessments. So like I said, this is all third grade, first trimester. And then just to kind of ensure that we're all assessing everything the same way. We've also created assessment rubrics, and we've linked this to our documents as well. That allows us all to look at the results for any of our given assessments and know exactly how we're going to grade that that assessment or to grade that project, so that we know exactly on this worksheet if a student got A correct, that we're all giving them a 4 in Pinnacle, so that there's really no disparity between the schools, that we're kind of ensuring that there's some common ground among the 4 schools. And this is our 5th grade, our 5th grade curriculum, which is still very much under construction. We're very lucky to have the materials to provide the students with the opportunity to do an 8-week-ish guitar unit, where we have a set of guitars that travels from school to school, and also a set of drums, different kinds of world drums that allows the students to have that experience as well. So these are just a few of the goals that we've outlined, the musical goals that we've outlined, but we've also really found that there's a lot of social-emotional ground that's covered in these. There's a lot of character development, and the kids just really, they really grow, and they really get to shine through these particular units. So this takes up about 2/4 of our year. At this point, the other 2/4 of our year are playing recorders, preparing for programs, things of that nature, and we're in the process of developing our essential outcomes, and basically during the process that we've done with grades K through 4 with 5th grade.
Participation in work habits. This is one of the many things that we've been able to develop during our monthly PLC time. We've been able to create several different rubrics to use both across multiple grade levels and for specific grade levels. This is the participation in work habits rubric that we use K through 5. And we all have it posted in our rooms. It's very kid-friendly, and we're able to reference it at different points in time to help kids understand where they are within our 20 minutes. This really is 20 minutes, and it goes like that. What we do is we mark the score in our gradebook every time they come, so that's 2 classes per week, and then we average those 2 scores before we put them into Pinnacle. So, for example, if a student is absent for both music classes in the week, there will be an X in Pinnacle because they haven't been there. But if a student gets a 3 one day and a 4 the next, the 2 scores are averaged to a 3.5, and that's what we enter into Pinnacle for their participation grade for the week. If a student is absent 1 of the 2 days, then obviously there's no averaging. That one day's grade stands as the grade for the week. I can tell you in my room, every student walks through the door as a 3, and their choices and behavior either raise their grade up to their participation and work habits grade up into the 4, or it can lower it. Unfortunately, sometimes it happens. But this is one way that we show, we communicate to parents how each student is this is the way that we can communicate to parents that how a student is participating in music every week. And this is our recorder rubric. This one we use for grades 3 through 5. It's very specific to recorder skills that we expect every student to achieve. And this is just an excellent example of how we have organized all of our rubrics. We have our elements and then clear descriptions of what it's going to look like if a student is a 4, or what they're going to look like if they're a 2. There are some that you'll see the boxes are X'd out, and that's because it's something that either you have it or you don't. It's just that simple posture. You're either sitting up or you're not. Pretty easy. As we create and review the rubrics for specific assessments, this is pretty much the format we follow. And whenever possible, we print a rubric on the assessment that we're giving the kids. And what we found is that there is a higher quality of work from the students and a greater understanding of what we've been doing. Where we're going? We're going far. we are assessing student data at our PLC meetings. We really do talk about what went well and what went wrong. For example, several months ago, there was a fourth grade assessment that they all did really great on, and I came in going, oh my gosh, help me. And so it was really wonderful. The three of them gave me a whole series of ideas for me to take back. And when I did take it back, it took my students from being ones and twos to being threes and fours. So that's the PLC really at work and how we can help each other out and just meeting once a month. As many of us have said, this is a living document. It is constantly changing. It's constantly being updated. And it's really exciting to me to be a part of it because every time I go to our meetings, I feel energized, which means that we're bringing that energy back to the kids. And our next steps, where we're going, we are really focusing on the last two questions of a PLC, which are what do we do when they don't get it and what do we do when they do get it? We've got several ideas going around including utilizing stations and extracurricular clubs and activities. And then we're also spending a lot of time sharing this document with the board, obviously, and with administration and with teachers in our building so that everyone understands the work that we're doing and that it is accessible to everyone. And then who knows, we might go beyond that, sharing more with the music community or anyone who listened, just because we're so excited about the work that we've been able to do. And it really would not be possible without the use of SIT morning, the PLC time that has been given to us in the morning of those half days has really been invaluable and has meant a lot to the four of us and a lot to the kids that we service every day. So please feel free to ask us any questions. And all of the work is on our Y Drive. It's in the music team folder. And thank you very much for letting us come and share what we find to be very exciting work with you. And we're always looking for ways to improve, so we'd love to hear comments or questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've added tablet computers like iPads recently. Have you found any applications or anything related to those that would help with music curriculum?
We have our ideas.
We were actually just discussing that a little while ago. But no, we haven't really looked into it with any intensity. Not yet.
There's a lot of good music programs out there
great stuff.
Oh, there's some smart board like group activities that can be done, like simulated drums or something that gets a hit on the screen.
Oh,
We don't have smart board.
Is there any way the recorders can
be destroyed?
I will say that is a parental decision. I always tell the kids you may not annoy any living, breathing thing. That includes your mother, your dog, your plant.
Well, we went through the whole squeaky time with recorders with my kids, but I will tell you that one of the takeaways in listening to your work now and having kids now out of high school and one in eighth grade that plays the trumpet, that this curriculum early on, K for a second, really sets them up to want to pursue an instrument. And whether or not they stay with it, you know, is not anything that you control, but preparing them with that baseline understanding of notes and all that was absolutely the reason that both of my kids went into music, because they really enjoyed, you know, their early. And I want to say one thing really quickly, just from a historical perspective. When I met Wendy 2.5 years ago, first time, right? Almost 3 years ago now.
Almost four.
Almost four. Oh, that's right. 3 years ago. What am I thinking? Trying not to have another birthday. We had a really important conversation around the lack of the ability to come together during and have face time during the day to really meet with your colleagues, to have a better understanding of what you're trying to accomplish. And so the PLC time and the targeted learning time and that you use the SIT mornings, I think have made a huge difference in the value of the music curriculum and the fact that the district values music and art. So I remember that conversation very distinctly about the struggle and the frustration of the lack of opportunity to have the conversation. So I appreciate, you know, we see a screen on the board with this very lovely
thing put together with your rubric, but behind that are hours of work. And I'm saying that out loud so it doesn't get lost on me, and I'm saying it out loud so that when we have community members listen to our board meetings that they understand that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have a couple questions. You talked about the national standards. Is that the same as the Common Core, or is that a different set of standards?
Well, the Common Core has only been developed so far in literacy and in English language arts and in math, but their national standards come out of a national organization.
And then I'm assuming this was largely K through 5. How do you guys integrate with middle school in terms of progression? And
we just met with Mr. Marchese, who was, this is his first year, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just met with him at the end of one of our institutes. And talked about concerns that he has and what his goals are as middle schoolers and how he can help kids reach those goals or at least be working towards what he would like them to be, 6, 7, 8.
Mm-hmm. We've also met with the instrumental music staff and they've asked us, well, how do you teach counting and, you know, what is your baseline? And we've given them the fourth grade curriculum so that they understand, you know, where the kids are coming from so they know what to build off of.
And is there any integration or collaboration with math?
With math?
Yeah.
Informally? Yeah. I mean, you know,
there's counting, there's subdivision, there's
fractions.
So are they part of these monthly meetings, or are they?
The math team.
Yeah.
Oh, they had never.
No.
And if I were talking to a parent, I know you've got your rubrics and your standards and all that stuff, but at the end of the day, what is the objective of our music program? Is it that every child learns an instrument by the time they leave school? Is it that they get exposure to an instrument, or that they can sing a song? What is ultimately kind of a 30-second understanding of the objective of the program?
I would say my goal is to have kids enjoy music, find something that they feel comfortable doing, whether it's playing, listening, moving, singing, and that they can grow up and be an informed consumer of music or participator if they choose.
And we're giving a lot of kids in the district some opportunities that they wouldn't have access to. Third graders get to all go to an orchestra concert, which many kids would never be able to do. Every kid gets to play 3 different instruments minimum: the guitar, the drums, and the recorder. So we're really providing as much of a well-rounded experience for kids as possible, and we're making them. Our goal would, we'd love to have our goal be musically literate children, but you know, with the time constraints that we have, we get as far as we can. So I think to say that we have kids that enjoy music and have a positive musical experiences is probably the goal. That was more than 30 seconds.
That's okay.
That's good.
I appreciate it. My kids have been through the elementary schools, and you know, I'm always pleased when I see what they do and some of the changes that's happened in the program. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Well, I do. I wanted to say it's interesting, you know, you, Mary DeForest going talking about their PLC, and, you know, I think the assumption would be, you know, that how do art or music or our specials, as you guys call them, how do they have PLCs? And I think this was a great example of helping us to understand, helping our parents, our stakeholders to understand that music and art and PE, for that matter, are not just learning songs like we all used to. That's what we all grew up with, and that is not what music is about. It's about teaching kids. And it, for me as a board member, to see the consistency across the district is so important, and it is so refreshing to see that that's exactly what is happening in our buildings, that you are working together, and, you know, we walk the walk. That's what we, you know, we say what we're going to do, and that's what you guys do. And I really appreciate seeing how you guys put it all into action. So thank you, Mary and her staff, but thank you guys too to show us in a little way how it happens.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
PLC, whole building, and a smaller PLC, grade level teams and departments. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks very
Thank
much.
You so much. Our next presentation this evening is our annual PMA report, doing our financial projections 5 years. I think everyone, perhaps not Sam yet, has met Mike Francis, who is our colleague from PMA and comes to us annually and more often in phone conversations throughout the year as we need assistance. So welcome back, Mike.
Thank you.
Hi, Mike.
Good evening, everyone.
You can speak out.
Or at any
point. No one's feelings are going to be hurt.
I will not have that. Well, again, good evening. Good evening. Well, my name is Mike Francis. I'm going to present tonight the results of the updated for the financial planning program. The district utilizes to do its financial projections. For the last few weeks, I've been working with Mr. Cicerella to gather data that's provided by the district and sit down with him to go over the assumptions that the district wants to use to develop those projections. And what you see tonight is a summary of the those results. There's a much more detailed packet that's provided that has the individual fund look and a lot more information on the assumptions. Again, this is just a summary of those different things. So we have lots of different clients that use the program. There's a number of ways they use them. Typically at this time of the year, I come out to present to your school board to give you an update once a year. But we, as the superintendent indicated, that we work with the district or the administration throughout the year to make assumption changes as certain assumptions become actual numbers or assumptions change based on what you'll see tonight. There's lots of different data elements that go into the program. The first thing is the annual financial reports. I just want to make one clarifying statement that it says 5 years of actuals. The FY11 still is in draft form. And so we have draft numbers of the FY11 AFR included. We've used drafts in the past because this is right when you're getting your audit is just being completed and it's not done yet. But typically, the draft is very close to, or if not, the final numbers when it's finalized. Another piece is the FY12 school district budget, which is the base for your financial projections, which was recently adopted, and a number of other data elements that we've got listed here. In terms of, we'll start with revenue and projecting how the district projects the assumptions used to project the revenue. Your current budget is just under $43 million, and we focus on the operating funds of the school district, which are the education, operation and maintenance, transportation, Illinois Municipal Retirement, working cash, and the TORT fund. The school districts throughout Illinois are funded differently, but in this section of Illinois, they're pretty much the same, especially in DuPage County, even though there is some variation, but most of the school districts that are in the neighborhood are primarily funded with property taxes. You can see here that your school district is also at over 87-88%, and another 5% comes from other local forms of revenue. And from this, you can see from the state and federal government, you get only a few percentage points of your overall revenue budget. So I'm going to talk about the different assumptions that are driving these pieces. The biggest one, again, is property taxes, driven by two factors, the consumer price index. Being a tax gap school district, you're subject to the property tax extension limitation law, and it limits you to your annual increases in your tax extensions to the consumer price index. And the dark blue bars, you see lots of different charts and graphs in our reports. The dark blue bars are actual information, and the lighter blue is the use for the projections. The school district will be adopting a levy. If you haven't already adopted a tentative, you'll be adopting it shortly, and a final very shortly also. And that is what you have access to is last year's consumer price index number, which is this 1.5. That's the number that can increase your extension annually over the previous year. And then beyond that, we're using 3% for this current year's consumer price index number for calendar year 11, and which will be used to drive your 2012 levy, and then 2.5% beyond that. Now, we're almost done with the calendar year, and we'll know what the final number is in sometime in January. So that's one of the assumptions that will change and amend over the next couple of months as that number, which is published monthly, will become nearer and nearer to an actual. The other piece that the district can access in the property tax extension law is also collecting additional taxes from new homes or new property that's added to the tax rolls on an annual basis. Now, this is not the amount that you're actually collecting. This is the amount of taxable value that's added to the tax collections. And back in 2000, even if you went back to 2005 and 6, those numbers were pretty high when there was lots of new construction happening, and they've fallen off tremendously like they have everywhere. And then so we're projecting a pretty flat number of new construction where it's at current. In terms of the sensitivity of these two things, the number one thing that the district needs to be sensitive to in terms of its revenue as being 88% or 89% of the operating revenue is the consumer price index change and the assumptions there. So just the reference, a 1% change from the assumption to an actual would result in plus or minus about $390,000 to the base, which would be in or out for the life of the projections on an annual basis. To the extent that the new property is a little bit different than the assumptions, for every $1 million change, plus or minus to the new property assumptions, it adds about $27,000 plus or minus to the projections. Again, this would be added or subtracted from your base of your tax extension. Other local revenue assumptions, for the most part, are pretty flat. CPPRT is a corporate personal property replacement tax. That's projected as current FY12 budget. All the local revenues are projected as FY12 budget also, meaning they're held flat. The investment income is based on your fund balances, and we're only forecasting a 0.25% rate of return on an overall portfolio for investment income. The smaller pieces of the revenue pie are state and federal, state money from the state and federal government, general state aid, is projected at 95% of the whatever the calculated allocation is. So this current year budget was, for the first time, the General Assembly prorated your general state aid. They only disbursed 95% of what a 6119 foundation level would yield to the school district, and we're projecting that into the future. So whatever the results are, we're taking 5% off the top. All other state grants are projected at their current levels, except for transportation, which your current budget in the fiscal year is about $100,000, and that's it's you're going to get more than that. And so we're projecting about $325,000 on an annual basis into the future.
Is $100,000 at the reduced level? Is it, are they just not paying on time, or is it actually reducing?
They're behind in their payments still, but the state is catching up in the distributions. So that's a factor. But regular transportation is another piece that was cut in the budget. But since you've adopted your budget, the state has dispersed what your quarterly distributions are going to be. And those amounts are higher than what you have in your budget. So you don't have them yet. But bearing that the state disperses them to you, and they should, because again, they're catching up on their distribution, you're going to get more than you budgeted this year. That's why we've increased it to 325 into the future.
But this increase isn't a result of the state has decided to fund more transportation, different types of transportation. It's all a catch up.
That's right. That's right. Moving on to expenditures, your expenditure budget this year is about $42.5 million. Again, we're focusing on the same six operating funds. And this is the different ways that these school districts throughout the state spend their money. And we're going to talk about the assumptions that are driving each of these pieces of the pie. Again, like all districts, the majority of costs are spent on people. Salaries and benefits are the largest expenditure items.
But this is us. This is not.
This is you. Yes.
I thought I heard you say this is the way the public district.
Well, most school districts have a very similar, unlike revenue, which can be very different. Even though I said most of the ones in the area look like yours, there are school districts that have, you know, more than only 25% funded locally from property tax.
Right.
But you'll never see a school district that has a very different looking pie than this. These percentages will change only slightly based on, a lot of times it's based on how much do you outsource. Do you have outsourced food service? Do you outsource your busing? And if you do, that cost is in purchase services versus it's in salaries. But that's where the only pieces of the pie really fluctuate.
So 64% is roughly what you're seeing in the marketplace for expenses.
That's right. Unless now, what services do you have outsourced here? So you have two pretty big services that are outsourced. If they were insourced, this would be probably above 70 or even in the low 70s. Then with benefits, you'd be above 80%. So it depends on what's outsourced versus what's in-house. The assumptions used in the projections for teachers, we have your teacher salary schedule built with their current step-in placement on the scattergram. And for the next 5 years, the assumption is a 3% base increase or increase of the whole salary schedule plus any applicable step, 4% annually for support staff, and then 3% for administration. Other expenditures, health insurance, the board contribution for health insurance is projected at 6% increase annually, dental at 5%. Most of the other budget line items are held flat. Like purchase services is projected flat in the ed and the operation, education and operation maintenance fund. There is an increase for the projection for the transportation.
Can I ask why though? Because I thought, what do we lock in on our new bus?
It was 1 or 2%, but that also includes special education transportation,
okay,
which has been increasing significantly.
That makes sense.
Supply and capital outlay, again, held at their current budgeted levels. So very, very little change in other types of expenditures projected. Minus special ed tuition. This is for outplacement for special ed education. Students, one that you have much less control over, and is projected at 5%.
So on the capital outlay, later when you get to your chart of the 5 years, did we use a consistent what we've been spending? Because the discussion that happened last time at the Finance Committee, I thought those numbers grew. So these numbers here do not include those 2013,
14,
15 capital outlays.
We budgeted about $1 million just in capital projects and then about another $500,000 in other capital expenditures over the next several years in the PMA projection. In the projections that the board saw a couple of weeks ago, we were instructed to sort of go back and look at our budgets and tell us where the potential is for dollars out there. Like we have not, you know, we've got a major project at Hadley with regard to the parking lot. We still have two other major parking lot projects we have roofs to address. We have the continued rollout of the 21st century classroom. It's many different things. Those were included in the projections that you saw that were created in-house.
So will you be updating this model with those projections just to see what the impact is, or that's not an exercise that will be done?
I suppose it's an exercise we could do. Whether or not we decide to do it, you know, I guess would be an administrative decision. But those projects are just used as sort of a prioritization tool in terms of, you know, we know that we have X number of dollars of roofs to look at in the next 3 or 4 years. When do we need to look at those, and when do we need to address that? And what is the impact of the budget over time?
I mean, I think if the board's considering, you know, that spreadsheet you put together, we should try to understand the impact to the five-year projection.
And we can do that. Mm-hmm.
Projections for certified staff or teaching staff are held level at their current level, just under 260 full-time equivalent positions throughout the life of the projections. Other assumptions that there's no changes in school funding or no changes in tax cap law. Now, we just know that we just got through most of the veto session that's still going to reconvene in a few weeks. Where that would be held, the tax cap would be overridden to 0% if your assessed value were to decline. And in most cases, that's going to be the case over the next couple of years. And I can tell you that would have a dramatic impact on the results that you're going to see over the next couple of slides. I actually ran it while I was sitting here. I wanted to see what would happen. If anyone's interested, I'll tell you when we get to that particular point. We also have estimated retirements. You know of 17 teachers that are going to retire over the next 4 years. And those teachers come off the scattergram and are replaced with a lesser salary of about $54,000 as an average of placeholder for Master Step 3.
Is that for all employees, including administration, or is that
just... No, that's just the teaching staff that we know are retiring over the next 4 years. So we're keeping them at about 260, that FTE, but they come off where they're coming off and they're being replaced at that. That's all incorporated into the cost. And then finally, your FY12 budget is an accurate base for the projections. You can really look at your revenue and decipher whether your revenue budgets are good. We cannot really do that on your expenditure side. So that obviously, if you don't, we're assuming that you're spending all of your budget. If you don't, obviously, that would be a compounded effect moving forward also in terms of changing the results of the projections. And this is a summary of the operating funds in aggregate, the six funds that we're discussing. Does this have a pointer?
No.
Revenue budget listed here, expenditure budget listed here. We got a current budget surplus of about just over $500,000. If you follow that down, your beginning fund balance is, again, based on your draft AFR. Is about $15.3 million and would grow to $15.8 million, again, if your surplus came in at $500,000 this year, which would result in about a 37%, that's actually of revenues, 37% of revenues. I'm not sure how, I can't remember if the district uses it as revenue or
expenditures.
All right, so we actually, I could just toggle something and change that, but it would be a very similar number because you're comparing that balance to that instead of that.
Oh, sorry. The federal revenue looks flat. Would the lunch program money that comes in go on the federal?
It's already been, well, it's been reflected in our current year budget because of the Hadley. When we open it up to the elementary, and that would have to increase, I'm not sure how that would change. But we would get more federal revenue based on that. Mm-hmm. But the Hadley already part of this year's budget, so that's already in there.
And Phyllis, that's based on the number of children who fall under our free and reduced?
No, it's a combination of things. With the National School Lunch Program, we do get more. We get a larger reimbursement for the free and reduced lunches that we serve, mm-hmm. but we also do get reimbursed for the paid lunches we serve.
That's right. That's changed.
And then the percentage that's down here, Bob, I guess it's one question. Does this relate to what we were talking about earlier at Finance Committee with regards to the fund balance percentage?
It relates to our discussion around fiscal philosophy and administrative procedure regarding fund balances.
I just was wondering, we're talking about dates and when it's calculated. Is this percentage based on the same sort of...
Mm-hmm.
This was calculated. This took last year's data, which ended June 30th.
Okay.
So, yes.
The your projections for the current year, does that include the your recommended levy amount?
The projections for the current fiscal year?
For
next year.
Right, the 13.
For 13 would include, yes. Part of this other assumption is that no change to the PTEL tax cap, but it's also assumed that the school board would adopt a levy that's capturing all the dollars available to them under the tax cap law, so that 1.5% and the 3 and the 2.5 moving forward, those are assumed to be captured in the projections.
So that tracks back to
the conversation that you had earlier today.
Okay.
As well as the presentation that you'll see this evening.
Okay. Okay.
And you can see that those kind of tie back to these percentages in local, even though they're not exactly the same, but this would be that 1.5 plus some other things. This 4 point would be the higher CPI projected for this year. And then the 3.5s are really 2.5 CPI plus the additional dollars for new construction and some other things that are going on.
Sure.
So it would be lower in FY13, because that's the 1.5%. That's the lower CPI from last year.
So the 13 number is projecting probably a $445,000 surplus.
Yes, exactly. That would be comparing next year's revenue to next year's expenditures.
Okay, which is different from our budget number. So we haven't done
the FY13 yet.
You mean for 2012? The levy that you will be looking at this evening will be for the 12-13 school year.
I'm trying to tie this number back to your budget number, because I see a $3 million swing.
Well,
we were talking about last year to this year.
I want to talk about the budget that we went through today, that we went through last time.
A couple of weeks ago for the committee of the whole. That number included the gross dollar value of capital projects that we could look at over a number of years, which would include multiple parking lots, roofs, and things of that nature.
You're talking about the expenditures, right, Drew?
Right. We were presented with a budget last meeting.
You were presented with an outlook of what...
We were presented with a five-year plan.
Right, a five-year outlook at what our major challenges will be in the budget. Not that that's the budget we will adopt, because it would have been a deficit budget.
Right.
Should we give you that? We won't give you a deficit budget.
That's why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can be assured on that one.
Okay. So the $2.5 million.
Correct.
Deficit is.
It's only a picture of if we did the capital projects that are on the docket. If we did them all, start roofs, continue on with parking lots, it would be about a $3 million expenditure.
Okay. So the $445,000 is a more accurate budget number.
Yes. It's looking at that 1.5, right? We put probably 1.5 million into capital projects.
Okay. So it's a closer, more accurate
correct
budget number.
Okay. But it kind of gets back to what John asked earlier,
right,
that if we and of course we don't think we could, and if we did put all of those things on the wish list into a budget, what would it do to our five-year projections? And we could talk with Mike about that, but it would certainly, it would exceed what we would have in terms of revenues.
Mm-hmm. So just to reiterate, I think the big delta between this and what was presented in Finance Committee is that capital outlay of the $4 million, $4 million, and $8 million, which is changes, but the rest is probably consistent in terms of expenditures, percent increase in dental, medical, and all that stuff.
All the same assumptions except for the capital outlay.
Well, and curriculum work and technology. I mean, which you do want to put into that whole assumption, but I mean, as we tried to lay out in that two-year outlook, was here are some of the biggest issues we're looking at. Turning our classrooms into 21st century learning centers, making some perhaps large revisions in our curriculum delivery, looking at foreign language, those kinds of things, which would be additional expenditures.
Right. What you see here is really a starting
status
place
quo
of a status quo moving forward, or what that would result in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We just, these guys, the committee of 6/7 of the whole, went through a spreadsheet that's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're looking at.
But, John, I'm glad you brought it up, because I brought it with me tonight just to remind myself that part of this conversation, and certainly the levy presentation, is a piece of these numbers and these priorities, if we're saying that they're priorities, et cetera, so that while this is a, starting point, the reality of the decisions that we make, certainly as we move forward, are have to be embedded in
this larger conversation.
Yeah, which is really the next slide where you'll be able to see the impact of that once it's embedded in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you can see, you know, if you track this line across, and you can see that the district would be running around the same surplus as it has been in today's budget, minus this last year on here when expenses are the highest last year.
You've been with us a while. The tracking of our surplus, and we project these surpluses and where we end up, are we plus or minus 10%, plus or minus 50%? I mean, what was our surplus we were projecting last year?
We projected a $1.2 million surplus.
And how are we doing on that?
And we had a 3.7.
Came in substantially higher. And we projected $1.2 million. We underspent our budget by about $900,000, and then we received substantially, significantly more state revenue than what we had anticipated, about $900,000 more.
And is that more because it came in a different period, or that's, so it's really...
It's a result of overlapping receipts between the 10-11 school year and the 11-12 school year.
Right. So I don't remember our projections being that off. Usually
they're not. This was an
plus or minus. Mm-hmm.
It's a result of the way that those revenues from the state were received and the timeliness that they were received.
Mm-hmm. We were just glad we received them.
This graph shows you the history of the aggregate fund balance for all your operating funds. If you track along the axis of the top, it, from 2007 to 2017, and follow the red line, this is your fund balance in 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, and that increase in 11 is what you just saw based on your draft AFR, the difference between what the book budget and the actual. Mm-hmm. And then this is your budgeted surplus, $500,000, and then again, those $500,000 so budgeted surplus is moving out into the future. The individual fund book is the 11 bars above each of the fund names. And again, it shows you the fund balance for a state of working cash fund.
It's a smart
one. Oh, that's why I changed it. I'm like, why? I'm not tapping that button.
We weren't going to tell you until we really smart. Someone ruined it and told me now. We were having fun.
We're willing to.
I'll do everything but keep my finger on the board. Does it know I'm pointing at it?
It's not that smart.
The working cash fund is represented pretty flat there, you can see. But those 11 colored bars are the working cash fund balance from 07 to 17. And the same kind of thing for all the funds.
Well, Mike, you might want to mention the transportation fund, how low that fund has actually gotten over the past couple of years. Yeah. And Mike and I had a discussion recently about increasing our levy amount in the transportation fund to sort of build and pad that fund balance in transportation. Because it's, as you know, we had to borrow $400,000 from working cash earlier this year, earlier this calendar year, just to be able to fund continuing operations in the transport.
And you can see there's one, it's, even though it's hard to see because it's a smaller fund, but there's a bar there, a bar maybe or two that actually are below zero, where you had a negative fund balance in the transportation fund. As Bob said, the district's addressing that by putting some of the tax, a little bit additional tax money there to try to build that up over the next few years.
Well, so you addressed it on the rate reallocation sheet or whatever?
Actually, we can, but you'll also see it in tonight's presentation.
You can only reallocate up to what you levy.
Right.
So you have to actually levy and then reallocate. But if you don't levy enough, you can't reallocate more than you levy.
But if you're going to put more on this side, you reduce it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So does that mean it's a net sum zero game, right? It's not a...
We're trying to make an accurate levy in that right now.
Mm-hmm. Right, but that is a levy strategy. You have to ask for it. You're only going to get what you're going to get anyway, but you have to at least ask for it to reallocate more to that fund if you want to. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And finally, how does the state of Illinois look at you based on their five criteria of a financial profile score? The highest score you can receive is a 4.0, which would put you in green or financial recognition. Everything above 3.54 is financial recognition, and you've been in financial recognition, and actually you have, based on your last two audits or your draft audit for this year, you have a perfect score of 4.0 and would remain there until the last year of the projections. And it only falls to this because of that small deficit. Anytime that this is red, you're going to fall 35 points. If you spend $1 more than you receive, you lose 35 points on your financial profile score. You'd still stay in financial recognition there, but that's what you would lose. Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any other questions?
No.
Does anybody want to know what will happen to this? If the
Oh, if we yes. zero, yeah.
Well, it got voted down.
It did. I don't think it's going to go away.
If what?
If the frozen levy, if your EAV drops, the frozen levy. Zero.
I mean, it is speculation. I don't think it's going to go away. I think it's going to be revived. It's not in 2 weeks, but in the next session. When tax bills come out again and rates or values go down and taxes go up, I don't think it's a dead issue.
Well, the recommendation was that they should pilot it in Representative Frank's district.
Sure.
And see how it goes, and then bring it back to the legislature, which I would vote for. Let him test it.
Do you have a new line to show us?
I do. I don't have it on the presentation, but I ran it, and I can tell you what it would look like. This, I ran a 3 years of zero. So the so effective immediately, you would have a zero for this levy year, a zero for next levy year, and and zero for levy year 13. And then you go back to your 2.5. This falls to $6.8 million. So it costs you about $11 million over 5 years. And the graph looks like some of the old ones there. I mean, it really, and you're running here, I think the deficit was about $3 million. The differences between the revenues and expenditures 5 years out, based on more of a status quo, but only cutting that revenue, this difference was about $3 million. Cumulative, $10 million over, or $11 million over the 5 year period.
Mm-hmm. That would change.
Did you have fun doing that?
that's the big one for you. I mean, that is the biggest one for a district like this. When you're funded with almost 90% of your dollars from the local tax levy, you have to be really careful with those types of laws. Mm-hmm.
And we also have a big TIF under consideration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have that too. 23 years.
Right? Have effect on you know how you define EAV growth.
With a TIF?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Downtown. Downtown.
What it increased to, or what you pay for that for 20 years?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry.
The TIF would, the whole downtown is being proposed as a TIF, basically, the whole downtown.
So it would freeze that value. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm saying
for that area.
If the law says aggregate EAV declines,
that's a good
how
point.
Does the TIF fit in? It would have gone up, but we're keeping it steady for 20 years.
Yeah, that's an interesting piece of that. I have not thought about that.
Mike, there was some discussion around the corporate personal, the CPPRT, the funding being used in part to fund the regional superintendent's salary.
Right.
How does that...
Well, that actually went through this year, and it's only for this current budget year, so we
to make up those dollars.
Mm-hmm. And it's about 1% of your total. Mm-hmm. Their budget, I think, is 12 or 13 million out of a CPPRT pool, which is about somewhere between $1 and $1.5 billion. So it's only about 1%. And if they take it for 6,000 taxing districts that receive CPPRT dollars, if they take it proportionally from everybody, everybody would lose 1% of their total. I don't remember what your
$1 million,
so it would be $10,000.
Yeah, it's nothing.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to lose that this year, but we're not projecting that you'd lose it in the future. But that's not to say that it won't happen, but it's not tremendously significant that's going to change that.
Yeah, it's the drop in the budget. The CPPRT went away completely.
So can we go back to the TIF concept? So if downtown Glen Ellyn does have this, how is that going to affect our numbers?
Well, you need to see us. I mean, that's the complex thing.
It's a complex thing. You really have to do a lot of behind the scenes work.
Yeah. The real question is, yeah, how do you calculate a TIF if they pass this law? Were TIFs written into it or not?
I have not heard that. I mean, that's a really interesting point to bring up. I have not heard that discussed at all.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to do a calculation on the ambient. That'd be very hard. Mm-hmm. You'd be making assumptions.
Most of them are over 20 years, yeah. TIFs typically are over 20 years, typically, aren't they? Yeah. They're looking at 23 for Glen Ellyn. Yeah.
And we already have 4 TIFs over at the corner of Bloomingdale and North Avenue that are Glendale Heights. So, not anywhere near the scope of what they're talking about for downtown Glen Ellyn, but we're already in 4 TIFs. Mm-hmm.
What is that meeting today or 2 weeks from now?
I'm sorry.
The TIF meeting?
The 17th. Yeah, 17th is the joint review. Joint review.
If you wait around, it's nice when a TIF expires.
Yeah.
If you wait 23 years, like Cantera TIF recently expired, and that was in District 200 and District 203, and that was a lot of additional because it comes out as new property.
Right, it comes out as new growth. Something I think Lombard had the. There was a TIF for Yorktown for the hotel and stuff, I think, that came off a few years ago that boosted their revenue quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And Lombard 44.
Thank you for getting this to us ahead of time. That was helpful.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a just-in-time thing for you, but appreciate getting it. Mm-hmm. Give a look at it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
You can touch your screen now. Thanks, Mike. See you later. Okay, the next presentation, which, all of these pieces connect to the ultimate conversation that we have each year about our expected levy and our intended request, and so Bob is going to share his annual report on that and talk a little bit about the numbers as he sees them currently.
So thank you for allowing me to present this evening's tentative levy, the 2011 tentative tax levy for Glen Ellyn School District 41. I wanted to just give you some background information before we move through the presentation. The budget process is something that occurred generally throughout the year. I began doing tentative levies for this year, probably back as we were finishing last year's presentation. Right now I have 5 levies taking us through 2016 that are tentative, given sort of the same assumptions that Mike just presented regarding EAB, CPI growth, new construction, and so forth. So this is something that goes on throughout the year, and it's a conversation. Well, it's a conversation I have with myself. It's just the way I sit down and I look at numbers and the implications given current economic situations and given conversations that we have throughout the given year at any point in time, just seeing what dollars may be available as we move forward. So, I do levy calculations sort of in isolation, meaning that obviously PMA has a much more in-depth, much more a greater tool than I have to be able to make the calculations. But it still gives us a pretty good idea. Generally, we come pretty close within a couple $100,000 of levy. So I wanted to talk very briefly about the timeline. We start looking at levies. Generally, as we complete one levy year, we're starting to look at another. I wanted to talk briefly about the calendar that goes on. I know that Ann included a calendar that was requested of her in the Thursday packet. And just some of the highlights of that that calendar are in September, we requested the Board of Education allow us to begin preparing initial numbers for the next year's fiscal budget. In October and in November and December, we bring the Finance Committee and the Board capital project recommendations that we're going to look at over the next fiscal year. This is all done in anticipation of sort of building that, having those building blocks to create that budget as a whole. In November and December, which you've just seen, you had your annual five-year financial projections from PMA. We're also going to talk about the tentative levy this evening, and we'll continue to have those conversations over the next month. In January, we give department heads, January, February, we give department heads and building administrators their budget worksheets that indicates what are their budgets now and where would they like to allocate those dollars. Now, for the past several years, almost as long as I've been here, a building principal has said, here, you have an X number of dollars for your next year's budget. Work within those budgets and create or align those expenditures so you don't go above the existing budget, but you can reallocate amongst the accounts that you have oversight of. In March, we sent out a note to our departments and our buildings to please submit all of your purchase orders for the current fiscal year. That as of about April 1st, we stopped processing purchase orders for the current fiscal year. Everything else is then scheduled to start as for the July 1st, the new calendar year. In late March, early April, right around as we're ready to take spring break, the assessor's office sends us the tax allocation worksheet. And that's the opportunity for us to reallocate funds amongst, reallocate dollars amongst the various funds that are going to be levied. And in May and June is when we start bringing the Finance Committee and the Board both our tentative budget as well as the final budget. And there are years when we actually vote on a budget, approval of the budget in June. Typically, we might look really greater towards or more towards August for final approval. So, this levy conversation is built upon a few knowns and several unknowns. What we know is that we take the CPI from the previous year. So as Mike has indicated earlier this evening, we know that entering this January, we're taking last December's CPI, which is at 1.5%. We know what last year's extension number was. What was that total dollar value extended in the operating funds, bond and interest, and then total? Those two numbers we use to calculate our tentative budget, or our tentative levy. And some of the unknowns that really we don't know the final numbers. Now, I speak to each one of the township assessors and try to get a feel for what they what their thinking is going to be regarding their actual EAV new construction. And generally what I'm hearing now is that overall we can expect the EAV in our district this coming levy year to decrease about 5.8%. And that calculation is made in the presentation that you're going to see this evening. That's about a 5.8% overall EAV within the district. And then the other unknown is new construction. Now, in this presentation, I've estimated new construction at $15 million. From the Milton Township Assessor alone, he's estimated new construction at about $13.9 million. So we only have a small amount of property over at in Bloomingdale Township. So I have increased it to about $15 million, which is consistent with previous levies that I presented to this board. The other unknown, that's sort of the wild card, and that would be state revenue. Phyllis and I struggle with this, and I'm not trying to throw Phyllis under the bus. So, excuse me. Bob has this conversation with himself. What do I do with state revenue? Because I will tell you, it is a constant source of irritation. I tell you that I spoke to Mike on it, and I present to the board what I consider the really, I'm a fiscal conservative. That's what I practice. That's the way I've always presented things. So I don't want to say I take a doomsday approach. I don't want to say that, but I do take a conservative approach in terms of what I'm hearing about expectations with state revenue. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with the levy this evening, but I'll just give you some quick insight here. We have two types of state revenue. We have general state aid, and then we have the others, the categoricals. So far this year, the state, now they've already reduced their allocation from 100% of general state aid down to 95%. But of all the other, the categorical revenues that we have received from the state so far this year, from July 1st to present, everything that's been received is for last fiscal year. So on a cash basis, we're recognizing it now. If you look at your treasurer's report, you're going to see there's a lot of significant amounts of state revenue in here. But that's all for last fiscal year. And we've gone back and tracked those to identify, just to make sure that what I'm saying is accurate. So,
What is the categorical revenue?
Special education, transfer.
No, the number is a million.
It's about 2 million.
2 million. Now, we've reduced that over the past couple of years significantly. And I guess my word of caution is that Phyllis has done some checking for me. We get four quarterly payments for categoricals. One payment has been vouchered so far this year. Here we are at the end of almost the second quarter. One payment has been vouchered, but we still haven't received it. And there's no indication when we will be receiving it.
But the at-risk is 2 million.
Yes, total.
Yes.
Bob, did we receive everything from the last fiscal year?
We just now received it.
Okay, so we get effort. We're good.
The last penny, Deutsche Mark, from last year. We finally got it all.
So we're whole for last fiscal year, but a significant amount of what we budgeted was paid this fiscal year. So on a cash basis, we look like we've received everything or more than what we should have received, when in actuality, those dollars are for the previous fiscal year. And those are the dollars that the auditors have taken and accrued back to the previous fiscal year. And that's the problem with trying to estimate what the state's contribution is going to be to our overall budget, because we don't really know. A couple other highlights before I actually get into my presentation. I've looked back over about the past eight to 10 years of revenue growth in the district, and in the early 2000s, revenue was growing at approximately 8% annually. The past couple of years, it's down to about 3.2%. Over the past couple of years, it's grown by 3.2%. As you know, we've given many presentations about salary and benefit expectations and where those dollars may go. Our assumptions are that overall salaries will increase by 4% annually. Well, if you have a salary line of $25 million, that equates out to about $1 million a year in annual increases in salaries. You also have benefits. Benefits are expected to increase. Now, this is the salary benefit. The benefits, this is medical and dental benefits. Those benefits are expected to increase about 6% annually, or about $250,000 a year. In addition, I presented on many occasions to the Finance Committee and to the Board the number of capital projects that we have coming up. As you all recall, we had a substantial referendum take place in, I believe, 1997. But we have aging roofs, we have aging parking lots, we have aging infrastructure within our buildings that all needs to be addressed over the next few years, several years. It's just how we prioritize and allocate those dollars mm-hmm. on an annual basis. We're also talking about implementing the 21st century classroom. And my thoughts are, if we continue along the pace, we decided to implement this slowly. We took 8 classrooms this year, 2 classrooms per building. We have roughly 130 classrooms at the elementary school level. That would take forever for us to continue to follow that process of only opening up 2 additional classrooms per building with 21st century a learning environment. My recommendation is, as we move through this year into next in our planning, is that we increase it to 16 or 24 classrooms at the elementary district wide, at the elementary schools district wide. We also need to look at Hadley and what are the implications for that regarding the 21st century learning environment, and also we need to start looking at our LLCs and what implications that has, and especially financially, how is that going to play into budget development over the next several years. Also, Mike annually or semi-annually presents to the board his technology plan. Theoretically or initially, Mike is looking at probably an increase of $200,000 next year for the rollout of new equipment. And just off the top of my head, some of those are, Mike would like to expand wireless expansion. He's got the grade school refresh, computer refresh. grade school laptop refresh, expansion of our 6-inch broadband, the Hadley Lab refresh, and the Art Tech Lab refresh, all amounting to almost $200,000 in lease commitments over the next 3 to 5 years. Then finally, the implications regarding curriculum. And Anna, I'll let you talk about the implications for curriculum.
Well, if we move forward with the long-range plan as we have underway currently, you know, we are looking at the recommendations that will come out of the think tank, hopefully being able to be implemented at least one of our schools next year, and looking at that cost as being probably around an additional $150,000. We'll be fine-tuning the recommendation around foreign language for implementation, probably in FY14, but training and beginning the process of piloting and looking at materials is probably at a cost of about $125,000 and training at about $300,000. So when we look at making some of the paradigm shifts that we're talking about from the classroom perspective, next year alone could look at Karen's budget being increased by about $300,000.
So now I'd like to get into the actual presentation. Okay, so what are some of the assumptions and final calculations? What does this represent? We are going to use the 1.5% CPI from December of last year for this levy. This levy request does represent a 3.69% increase over last year's extension. Overall, I expect to receive approximately 2.59% increase in anticipated revenue, or about a 1.1% difference. And my calculations are based on CPI, estimated EAB, and I should say estimated new construction as we know it today. So what is the history of the CPI? We go all the way back to 1991. As you can see, we had a 4.1% in 2007. Then we had the economic meltdown in our country. The CPI was 0.1%. Last year, it was back up to 2 years ago, it was back up to 2.7%. This year, last year for December, it's going to be it is 1.5%. Overall, what does this represent over the past 10 or 15 years? About a 2.7, a 2.8 average increase in CPI. So you look out at the past couple of years, you have a 2.5, a 0.1%, a 2.7, and a 1.5. So we're kind of all over the map, if you will. But overall, historically, we have an increase of about 2.7%. This is a slide that indicates the darker green lines indicate the amount of annual levy request. The lighter green lines at estimator actually tell you actually what was the increase in extension year over year. So as you can see, we've closed the gap on what we request versus what we actually receive over the past several years. This year, as I indicated earlier, it's about a figure of about 1.1%. And there we have it calculated out. Now, what does that mean in terms of levy? We're looking for a levy of $41,831,324. That is a all-inclusive levy, including bond and interest, which is $2,727,000. And as you can see, here's the rates for the past 10 years. Bond and interest, as you know, it's been growing. This will continue to grow to 2017 or 18, That's the way that they structured the debt a number of years ago. As you know, that with last fiscal year, we had a bond payment that was $1.1 million that's rolled off the books. You don't see it here because when that one rolled off, the other two were increased. And this will increase to about close, it's a $2.7 million of low, close to $3 million over the next few years. I think about $50,000 or more per year. So it shows a bond and interest rate of 0.2066%, an operating rate of 2.96, an overall rate of 3.1675.
Well, the reason you see that rising is because the EAD is
decreasing. There's an inverse relationship. When the PTEL was created to stop the rapid growth in property taxes. So they created a formula whereby with increasing AAV, it's going to continue to force down your rate. Well, what hasn't, and I'm assuming no one anticipated EAV ever going down, and that's essentially what's happened over the past couple of years. With EAV going down, the rate is actually going up.
So isn't there, there is some max, you know, in theory of EAV, drop like a rock, isn't there something? What is the max?
There is a max, and Phyllis and I have...
The statutory limit? At all, it's no longer by fund, but it's a state level statutory limit where the rate can't exceed something. It's over, I don't know what the number is. There is a statutory
is it like a delta in the rate, or is there a ceiling for that?
It's a statutory limit.
The statutory limit for the rate wouldn't be able to exceed that. Oh,
but that's different for every district, though.
No, they removed that a couple of years ago. You no longer have your local statutory limit. That was removed with some legislation. Say 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
So it's all at the state maximum statutory limit. Where there's a difference is maybe if there's a unit district, high school district, or an elementary district,
right.
But it's now at the state statutory limit. The local limits have gone away.
And those are based on?
A number in the school code.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. That's where they are
actually addressed.
Yeah.
And so districts would host referendums, and they would set their own local maximums, and then they have to have a referendum to exceed that. But then there was always in place the state statutory maximum, but there is only reference on specific funds, Fed, O&M, and transportation, and special ed. There is no cap on the IMRF for the bond and interest for the bond and interest. So that was shifted up, I think, about 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah, okay.
To the state to the statutory limit.
I thought we looked at some
right. We ran some numbers a while ago, and I think we determined that our EAD would have to reduce by 50% before we could.
Oh.
We did have to go down to around $700 million.
Yeah,
we
did that last year, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Bob talks to himself about things that I
run numbers.
But yeah, it would have to really, our EAV would have to really, really drop double digits to get to that rate limit.
Okay.
And as I said, it was about $750 million in EAV, which is a 50% reduction from where we're at currently. So, then, what is the tentative levy request? In the Ed Fund, we're requesting $34.3 million. Last year in the O&M Fund, we requested $3 million. I reallocated that $250,000 into the Transportation Fund to provide us a little cushion. So we're going to take down the O&M request, increase it in the Transportation. We don't levy in Life Safety. We do levy in the Security Funds and the Retirement Funds. And in the Working Cash and Support Fund, we've had that conversation a couple of years ago where we're just going to levy minimally. As I said, bond and interest is outside of the district's ability to levy. That's given to me annually by the assessor's office. So we're requesting $42,279,800. So what are the next steps? We're going to post in the December 1st, 2011 newspaper with the levy request. We are going to, this evening, we're going to establish the date and time for the public hearing, proposed tax increase for December 12th, at which time we'll hold a public hearing at 7:15 in the afternoon, 7:15 in the evening. And then
And then you'll take action.
And that will take action.
We'll ask the board to take action that evening.
Mm-hmm. So that is my presentation this evening. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can. I know Dan had some questions earlier today. I tried to address those regarding another issue. It's still ultimately tied to the levy. And if you have any questions or concerns, give me a call, shoot me an email, set up an appointment, stop by. Mm-hmm. So
that would be my first advice or suggestion, is that if you have specific questions for Bob on the levy, request that either you email him those questions or you set up some time to meet with him to be able to discuss those. We have put or will put on our November 28th agenda levy discussion. So if you feel that you wish to have a discussion about the levy request at that meeting, you'll have a chance to discuss it, and technically on the 12th, we would not have discussion on the levy. You would simply be taking action on it. There might be final questions or something, but it would not be the time for discussion.
When are we going to get a presentation on fiscal year 11? And the surplus and discussions of estimates and actual. Is that next week? When
it
goes into all this stuff where we need accurate estimates. I mean, it's great we get surpluses, but we can't have humongous surpluses. It just throws everything out of whack. We need to understand this.
Yeah,
I agree with that, Stephen. The biggest thing that sort of fell out of whack this year was the fact that we received so much more in state revenue than we had anticipated.
Well, and I think the fact that our salary line came in significantly lower as well, as did capital projects. So we budgeted for capital projects. They performed well and came in significantly under.
Mm-hmm. Under budget. Salaries, benefits, and capital projects came in significantly less than what we had anticipated.
But, which is a good thing.
Well,
obviously.
But we need to estimate it.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
You want that broken up, Dr. Asking.
Mm-hmm. Well, he wants to know what
we're having a discussion about fund balances, and we just blew through 33%.
Mm-hmm. Right, but
I mean,
Steve,
this
is part
of that.
The
first time I saw it, I'm like, okay, we're around whatever below it, and now all of a sudden we're looking at 37%. So it's totally unexpected.
Is part of that the state piece, though, or these? You know, as Bob said,
we still have surpluses every year. I mean, yeah. If you're saying it came in this year, not last year, I think I'd see a 1 year down another up. I've not seen that.
But what I heard is that the state piece of it was $900,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about $4 million, which $1.5 million was.
Yeah, but we still had a.
So it's still huge. It's 50% of it was unexpected.
Yeah.
Which is a big number.
Yeah.
Well,
no.
If we estimated 1.2 and we came in 3.7, that's $2.5 million more than we thought. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't need to get into it now. If you want to prepare something just to explain a little more, I just want to understand how we're estimating that. And I understand the state money's coming in differently, but we're hitting surpluses every year.
It's still 50% more, though. So it's a big one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's still over half of this unanticipated.
Is some of that the bundling of the transportation contract, partnering with?
No, that's good for this
year. Yeah.
Steve, I had set up with the auditors for them to come in at the first meeting of January. That was because we don't even have the final audit yet, although the numbers are pretty well locked in. We don't expect the final audit until later this week. So the original plan was to bring them in at the first meeting in November.
January.
Excuse me, January.
Well, I just don't know if we're going to get concerns about how much we levy our levy request based on what our current reserves are, and that goes into how we estimate things. So
that's always,
I think,
part
the
of
pertinent
the conversation.
Discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, and to me, it goes to, well, you know, we've had cutbacks, you know, and I don't know if we're going to get into more discussion about parameters. I mean, the fund balance is only one parameter out of all the finances. I mean, what you spend per pupil, I mean, should that be within a range? Are we growing surpluses at the expense of not doing other things that certain districts are doing that we're cutting back, or things like that? I just want to understand that a little bit.
I would say certainly some of our reorganization work, and I think that's probably a discussion for us to have at the next meeting because it does have levy implications, but certainly some of our reorganization has been in preparation for us to do other things as time goes on that we want to be able to do that. If we didn't make those changes, we wouldn't be able to afford. And I think we had a conversation, as unexpected as this is, and I'm not going to disagree or even, you know, not act as if we're not surprised as well. But so we talked about some of the things we were going to do, what we've reduced, and with a plan to expend. So that we can make some of the changes we need to make, then level out again and live within those expenditures. So as the whole shifting of what education and learning environments looks like in our district, there is going to be, we have been very, very conscious of being conservative in our expenditure lines. So, and that's not to say we've taken things away that we didn't want to do, or that we would have done otherwise, but we've tried to be really prudent in order to prepare ourselves for the next steps.
Mm-hmm. This is something, as you do your monthly statements, that we would know we were trending towards, right?
Well, our final statements showed that we had a $900,000 or June, yeah.
That was last month's?
June 30th
statement that you saw in August. And then, is that monitored then quarterly? Is that the way it works?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's monitored. We create those statements monthly,
right.
And the June 30th statement was presented as part of the board packet in August, and at that time it showed a $900,000 that we underspent expenditures by $900,000, and that we had received in excess of $2 million more revenues than we had anticipated. Some of those were accrued in, some were accrued out based upon our cash statements.
The monthly statement that the board gets monitors, you know, the categories of salaries and benefits compared to the prior year, and because that's a good gauge, because then you can see, am I running ahead of where I was last year?
Mm-hmm.
And that's done on a monthly basis. Granted, we don't pay our, in June we paid all of our salaries, so that's kind of like, you know, for salaries and benefits, that's when we really can see it. But as the year goes by, we can see we're trending a little bit below or higher as mm-hmm. the year goes through.
And we trended pretty close to
yeah.
to the previous year during the year. There were no big surprises. I certainly agree with
you. I just see it playing into the rest of our discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we just need something in the letter or something just to help explain
mm-hmm.
it.
At least divide it up so we understand
yeah.
the category.
And we can do that.
If we're making the same assumptions this year on budgets, that, you know, mm-hmm. where, you know.
I think part of the conversation, too, is what John mentioned, and the reason I wanted to have this picture in front of me, and that is these projections for the STEM 21st century classrooms. You know, your comment, Bob, about if we do two classrooms over the next 80 years or whatever it is, right? I mean, it's going to be a slow move. And do we or don't we want to build that program? I mean, that's a board discussion, and that's certainly it weighs into the levy, but it also weighs into our philosophy about how we want to move this district forward in terms of aligning with core, with the standards, which is career and college readiness, you know? So that to me is a different, we're in a different conversation this year, for me at least personally, because those things are on the horizon in a more impending way.
So
we need to understand that.
I don't want to derail us here, but just very quickly, Bob, so 4 and 8 million that's in that capital, is that including the 21st century change, or is that the next line down that talks about?
I budgeted about, we spent about $80,000 this year for just furniture and carpeting and things of that nature. I would say overall about $100,000 a year for implementation of 8 classrooms.
But in that spreadsheet?
In my spreadsheet, I upped that to $200,000 a year, so at least doubling what.
So that did not address your go to 16 or 32 classrooms.
Well, it would, that spreadsheet would address going to 16 classrooms, not to the next step, 24.
But that's not included in the capital project line, or is it a separate line, or it's in the capital project line? I think that was the question.
I think it was a separate.
Yeah,
it was a separate
line. And that only includes, that line item only includes furniture and fixtures. I mean, that's Bob's. We didn't put in 21st century learning in that same vein. We put in foreign language and some of the other pieces.
Yeah, but you had a curriculum bucket, a 21st century bucket.
Mm-hmm. And we had curriculum, HR, Julie's department, Karen's technology, and myself. Mm-hmm. They were all broken out in the district.
Well, you know, based on what Steve brought up, I'd like to ask each of us, as we have questions or conversations like you guys are having about the levy, I really want to make sure we don't wait until the board meeting, and that any questions, concerns really get to Bob ahead of time and to Ann. And please copy both of them so that they can have a common conversation and can draw Phyllis in or whomever needs to come in to weigh in on questions, all right?
Well, Erica, what I was talking about under my breath was, since I'm new to this process, I just wanted to confirm what I thought was true of the, or asking for the 3.69, but we're really only expecting a 2.59, right?
Correct. Right.
And those numbers equate to the 42 and change to the 3.69, and then the 2.59 to 41.8.
Okay.
That's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is roughly a million something over last year.
About $1,050,000.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just for me personally, I would like to see last year's final budget with the final surplus, and then, you know, next to this year's projected budget with whatever expenditures we're going to have, and then match that up with my letter requests. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that's going to happen, but mm-hmm. I just, for my own personal education, mm-hmm. that's what I would like to say.
And so what, I think I asked this before, I can't remember the answer. So we have a tentative levy, that's just the extension. So we ask for one number, we expect to receive a lower number. What is the impact of receiving that lower dollar? Is there a program that there's pulled out there to get it funded, if not?
No, and we've tried to explain this to you, that we begin to build our budget based on the anticipated levy as well as the projected levy, what we request. And so if we have to adjust when we can do something, capital projects is a perfect example of that. We know we have to create and adjust our levy to match the dollars that we receive. So we always have greater need than we will have dollars for.
Right, and I was just trying to understand when we saw that 2 weeks ago at that meeting, we saw, you know, this $2.5 million deficit, but now you're saying you took that out. So then what is taken out if you don't get the...
Well, most likely what will be taken out would be, would try not to do the technology rollout any slower. We'd probably roll back some of the curriculum changes that we hope to make and slow that process down. It's most likely answer, I would say, because we're already locked into $1 million more in expenditures next year for salaries. Mm-hmm. So anything beyond that would take our long-range plan strategies and say, okay, how do we modify those to live within the resources that we have?
Sam, your question about this is what we ask and this is what we get is goes back to the kind of the quirky way that this all has to happen, which, you know, I had asked Dan if she would put the operational services timeline in here, because it always helps me do the reality check on when you start doing staffing projections, et cetera, because all that happens after boards, not just ours, but certainly everybody has to levy, and so it's just a really functionally, you know, backward, you know, system.
And the fact is that we're dealing with unknowns, and that is, what is EAB truly going to come in at? And the infrastructure.
If I had those numbers on hand, I could go in, drop them in the spreadsheet, do the calculations. But I don't have that ability. We simply don't get that information till, you know, they don't make those final levy calculations till March, which is 3 months later than what we actually need them for this presentation.
Bob, just round numbers. The levy that ultimately I think we'll be looking at is roughly $1 million increase from the prior year.
Correct.
If I use the PMA budget, which is, I guess, more accurate than the one from last week, there's, again, round numbers, rounding up to the 445, that's $500,000. So $500,000 of the levy goes to surplus, and the other half goes to budgeted items. Am I oversimplifying that?
I feel we're confusing stuff in here. Now, I wasn't a part of the finance committee member of a whole, but I think that spreadsheet was your five-year projection, right, with the wish list in it. You guys tell me, you guys are the finance committee. This is the way I interpret it, so I'll make sure I interpret it correctly. That was the five-year wish list. Probably had a lot of the same assumptions in terms of medical increase, dental increase, levy assumptions, you know, all those things. But the big delta there was the capital outlays, and then you were showing us how you broke out some issues around curriculum, some things around 21st century, and I assume part of the discussion at some point with that spreadsheet will be, you know, maybe if we ramp up the 21st century, that number will get bigger, and we need to take something out of the capital number, or they both grow.
Right. So, and you can never do everything you want.
No, but to me, it's kind of apples and oranges. This versus your spreadsheet. I mean, for this year, it's okay, but
between PMA and what I presented, completely different.
With different purposes.
Except for the 2011-12, because you sounds like the numbers were pretty much in line with what your spreadsheet was. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but it sounded like they were pretty much in line.
The PMA presentation for next year, basically, which is using basically this levy, is just saying that potentially, if everything stays status quo and we budget the same way, we'll have a $500,000, you know, excess, comparing revenues to expenditures for that year. Okay. So, because basically PMA, when they do their presentations, they do their calculations, they're assuming that the board is going to levy to the max. So, I mean, so basically it's the same presentation, the same levy dollars are in both Bob's presentation and theirs. So, that's what it shakes out to be when you start dumping it into the budget year that it's related to. If the levy goes, you continue to levy at that level and you continue to budget at that level, it'll shake out to be a net excess of about $500,000 for that year, is what he was showing here.
Okay.
But the levies are basically the same calculation.
Okay. Well, thank you. So, again, thanks to Ann. Thank you, Bob, for getting back to me on my email. And any other questions? We'll look forward to getting them. Action items onto consent agenda. Are there any items that board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, which includes human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, resignations, number 2, finance, facility, and operations, number 3, other matters, including board meeting minutes, the October 24th, 2011 Finance Committee of the Whole meeting, and the October 24th, 2011 regular meeting and closed session.
Erica, I'm sorry. I just had one question about the personnel report. Why was Heather kept in resigned and then not correct? Or is that just a
report? It's a basketball, as a basketball coach.
Okay. Are we pulling the report can we pull it, go through the consent agenda, and properly go through it?
Yeah. Well, you can if you like. Yeah. I mean, but you...
I see my mistakes, so I'll withdraw my question.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Motion?
Motion. Second.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Jim. Roll call, please.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bonda?
Yes.
Mrs.
Howard? Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr.
Allen?
Yes.
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations. Number one, increase to rate of pay for substitute aides. At its October 24, 2011 special meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to change the rate of pay for substitute aides from $9.50 per hour to $80 per day, effective immediately. In the interim, and based on the board's request, the administration asked 28 districts for information about their fill rate, and we received responses from only five districts. Many responded, there was no data available, and from those who did respond, there were no clear patterns of fill rate. May have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented.
So moved.
A second?
Second.
Discussion.
It's unfortunate we didn't get any data just because I understand we're making a salary increase, but there's a hope that it helps solve the problem. But it would be nice to see what other districts are at and see reality meets our expectations.
They just don't keep that data unless they do, unless they're in a system like ours, and even then it's a very particular calculation that Lori does, but most of the districts don't do it, but they either have sub-callers still, it's not automated, so we just couldn't get that information.
So the rate is increasing from $9.50 an hour to $11.43 an hour?
Correct, which is within the average of DuPage County, similar districts. Not even similar districts, 28 districts within DuPage County.
I just had a question. Is it substitutes or substitute aides?
I'm sorry?
Are substitutes called aides?
It's aide substitute.
So, John, are you asking substitute teacher, you're standing in front of the class? Or the aide, a substitute aide for a one-on-one or a...
These are the aides.
Yes.
For special needs.
Yes.
Very hard to fill. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't confused.
Any other discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondra?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mrs. Melton?
Yes.
Thank you.
Resolution of levy intent. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation that the Board of Education adopt the resolution of intent to levy titled Truth in Taxation Act Resolution as presented.
Motion.
A second?
Second.
Discussion?
What is the impact on this recommendation versus
discussion? I'm sorry, go ahead. Could you ask that again?
I was just trying to understand this, what this is, or discussing it in 2 weeks.
This allows us to post the Truth in Taxation resolution and move our levy process forward in a legally compliant.
Just advertise it so we can get our constituents to come and tell us what they think.
Right. So that was this part of the back of the board report, just the description of the Truth in Taxation.
I'm just trying to remember last year.
Yeah,
how it came.
Any other discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bondra?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Establish date and time for Truth in Taxation hearing. They have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation that the Board of Education establish the date and time of the Truth in Taxation hearing as December 12, 2011 at 7:15 p.m. at the Central Services Office, 793 North Main Street, Glen Ellyn, Illinois, 60137. The administration is further recommending that the Board of Education authorize and direct the Secretary of the Board of Education to publish or cause to be published the notice of the public hearing in accordance with the Truth in Taxation Act on December 1, 2011 in the Liberty Suburban Chicago newspaper. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Kaplan?
Yes.
Mr. Vondrick?
Yes.
Mrs. Miller?
Yes. Okay, superintendent's report. You have your enrollment information, which is, you know, continues to just remind us that we are pretty stable in our enrollments in the district. I wanted to do just two very quick items. One was to just give you a little background on the TIF proposal that Bob and I attended a meeting with the village along with District 87 and learned that the TIF proposal is a 23-year TIF, 85 acres at $162 million anticipated budget, which is a relatively large TIF. We spent some time talking with them about the impact that it might have on our different districts and asked for them to give some consideration to some things that hopefully we'll be able to further discuss at the joint review meeting, which is November 17th. Overall, an excellent meeting, very productive, and good listening on all sides. We do have some questions and concerns about the TIF, basically from the standpoint of our ability at some later point to be able to mount a referendum should we choose to do so because of the impact of the TIF on our local taxpayers. So we've expressed some of those concerns, and we'll continue to keep you informed as our conversations move forward. The other thing I wanted to remind you of is that this is your last board meeting with paper copies. For the November 28th meeting, you will not receive a paper delivery. Unless you indicate to us we need to postpone this move, no. We'll be having laptops at the next meeting at CSO. Michael will be setting us up and getting us ready to go with that. And so everything that you receive will be online, and you'll be able to access it through Board Book, including my regular communication with you on Thursdays. I also wanted to let you know that there won't be a regular Thursday communication with you next week. You'll receive one this week, but I'm taking, if I need to talk with you on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of next week, I'll do so by email. Okay?
Are we still allowed to request paper if we don't want it?
Well, that our goal is no paper. You can print it out if you like.
You can print it out at the district printer.
But that's not an option.
We're not offering that.
And you know what, Dan? And I, one of the things in trying to move to this online book is you need to be able to take notes. We need Adobe 10 for Adobe 42 for eventually, but you know, some update that we have to add on our machine because we don't have one. So, yeah.
I can send you a link to that download.
Right.
I just wanted to know if there was an option to get paper. The answer is no.
Can
I just have a quick technology question? If I annotate on the board book and all that, right, can that be forwarded? Because I want to save it and have all my annotations ahead of time. So, but I could bring my own laptop as well.
Yeah, or just save it to a flash drive.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what we talked about.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I can remember.
And concerning the TIF, I know I've talked to you. I mean, at what point do you think you can? I've asked for basically a spreadsheet saying with TIF, without TIF, and assumptions on growth.
We're working on that, but we don't have that finalized yet. We will provide it to you as soon as we have what would be estimated impact.
And I, in addition to that, My perception is that the community I don't know how many people were there at those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
My gut tells me there's really not a lot of community awareness about what a TIF is and truly the impact, particularly on our school districts that are funded through our community and our local property owners, and what that TIF district, what that will mean. And I know in one of our prior arts groups, I believe it was President Vicki Hayes, who talked about the amount of tax revenue that's actually generated from downtown Glen Ellyn is not that great, that a TIF district would even be she was not saying the TIF district would not be needed, but her comment was about, you know, how much sales tax is actually generated that gets back into the community and from the downtown area. So I don't know what we can do to get our community more aware of how this is going to impact our schools, and particularly a 23-year TIF, whether that's the norm or not, I don't know. But
well, as we know more and as we have our joint review board meeting, certainly we'll share that information with you, and suggestions that are made to that board, you know, are taken into consideration.
Well, my concern is not that it may take away with PTEL, but it just may push the burden to,
right,
to the homeowners. That it's
exactly what it does.
Some people may think, well, all those taxing districts will now have lower levy extensions, and money will go towards, you know, lowering property taxes in the TIF district. Well, that may not be the case.
Right.
It just pushes the burden to everyone else, so it's effectively just a big tax increase for all the homeowners.
Right.
And that's part of the communication plan. It's part of what we'll give you when we give you the spreadsheet,
okay,
is to give some estimate of what that will mean to our taxpayers.
And that's what I'm saying, Steve. I mean, I think that's my concern, is that the community is not, you know, aware as much,
right,
of these things that are going
and
on.
It takes
discussion.
It takes a pretty large communication plan, and I know that the villages, that's part of their planning as well, is how do we communicate this and articulate it in a way that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say quickly that Maureen will be out of the office until after the November 28th board meeting. So if you have... She'll be back November 28th. It's all the preparation. But if you have any questions or need anything that I can't do for you, then certainly feel free to email Nancy Moak at the district office. And I don't know how many of you will be talking in your board report about the site visits to various schools. We are one more site visit tomorrow, and I believe that Karen has scheduled another site visit to Oak Park, hopefully for sometime in November, which will leave our foreign language site visits, I think, at 5 different schools. And
mm-hmm.
We've had a great turnout from parents who have been very enthusiastic and very interested in both dual language and exploring other options. So we feel really energized by their involvement and their participation.
If anybody, I'm scheduled to go on the site visit tomorrow, but I've had some work and family things come up in the last couple hours that really are going to prohibit me from going. So if there's a board member who hasn't attended and would like to attend tomorrow's session, let me know so I can tell Karen.
Mm-hmm. Where is it to and what time?
It's in District 59. Yeah, and I'm not sure. No, we were in Schaumburg today.
Okay.
It's in District 59, and I'm not exactly sure which school it is. I'd have to look. I don't have my spreadsheet.
59
is Palatine, Elk Grove Village.
And is it a dual or is it foreign language?
It's a dual language program. There aren't a lot of foreign language programs.
I went to one dual, I think they're the same.
The one we saw today was very different from West Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, different model. It's still a dual language, but a different model.
What time is it
from? It's from like 9:30 to 11:30, but
earlier. I thought it was like 8:30 to 11:00.
No, 8:15. That was today in Chamber.
I have to look.
Mine was 9 to 11:30.
Yeah.
The one tomorrow was long. I did a long one, but if the
I'll take a look at some. I have Karen sent me an email about it.
Okay, that's it. All right, great. Board reports. Let's go to Sam.
I did prepare the
lovely
report. I do have a change.
Uh-oh.
This is, of course, the only one I disagreed with. I now
agree with?
I do agree with it.
Oh, okay.
I went back in. It's the number 9.
Yeah.
The committee recommended not approving it because it's already in the statute. And
yeah.
I went back and looked at the statute and it is. So it's basically put in the position statement of the fidelity law. So
yeah.
I changed number 9. Yes,
11. Okay.
So you're saying this is not necessary because it's already
They just have to get an application, right?
Well, I actually have to get a legal
application.
Thank you. So other than that, any other questions?
No. Interesting stuff.
Thank you, Sam, for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Sam, for
doing
that.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
And so I want just a consensus thumbs up on that. Any concerns, questions? God bless you. All right.
I had a question on number one. What is the impact of number one?
Preschool programs?
Yeah. The general state aid formula to include pre-K. What's the impact of raising gas rates now? On
the law?
Well, it's got to have a funding impact, right, or not?
Yes.
So what does that mean from a funding perspective? We're saying no, but the general state aid formula calculation based on the number of students served, what's it based on now? Why is that?
It's not based on pre-K students now. It's based on only K through 12. And pre-K has been funded solely through grants. And I believe the rationale behind the no is that if it were done with a state aid formula, and that it would almost mandate a preschool program in some school districts, while that money would be helpful, would still not be enough for them to be able to afford the program. And so some of your districts, which are much more cash strapped, would be thrust into a forced program that they cannot afford.
So basically, sticking with the grant approach seems to give us more control.
More flexibility.
Okay, anything else? Okay, good. We have consensus on that. And then I just, again, want affirmation of his appointment as our IASB delegate.
Woo-hoo.
Thumbs up. Thank you very much, Sam. Grab your paddle.
Proclamation.
Thank you very much. Other board reports.
I attended the Hadley November 8th Hadley PTA meeting. There was a speech team presentation. Three members from the speech team that gave their little spiels, and they were fantastic. Actually, a little sixth grader had an original piece that was fantastic. And apparently, they had their state competition this past Saturday. I don't know what happened, but apparently, that's what it was. The other big thing is the spring show. March 16th through 18th, that was supposed to be announced today. Does anybody have any information as to what that show actually is?
Charlie Brown. She's going to be a dorm.
Auditions and et cetera will be set. Apparently, there's always two casts.
That's more kids.
They have like over 100 kids that are in the production.
So that's all.
Well, I, like John and Ann, went to see a dual language program in Barrington, District 220, which is a unit district through high school, and got to see had a wonderful presentation from Dr. Reyes, and also have handouts, which I think I probably have, but if people are interested, I'm happy to give that to you to take a look at it. So we spent about an hour with just a general presentation and gave a lot of detail around the FLAP grant and how they got their dollars. And then took a look at a kindergarten classroom, or two kindergarten classrooms, and then a fifth grade classroom to see the difference. And it was, they have to do a lottery because they don't have enough space to house as many classrooms as they would be able to fill. And in fact, what's happened is that parents are so interested in now getting their children into these dual language programs that they are checking the district's plan, because they do a rolling rollout of the lottery and where they house these programs. And as people come into the district, they have had people ask them ahead of time so they can look for homes in the homeschool district so they can get their kids in there, because that's the first lottery. Spanish.
It's all Spanish?
Yeah.
These are native English speakers. Be in a class that's
right.
In Spanish.
And these were just the kindergarten classes were amazing. These kids really doing much of their work. Fifth grade, all of their math lesson plan that we saw was done in Spanish. And and he also talked about the recruiting strategy that they use for these dual language teachers, which is very challenging, and has gone to out of Spain, which was a typical place for them to recruit, and into other countries. So he's become very adept at figuring out how to hire, because they're very challenging positions to hire, so it's a very good program. Very quickly, LEND meeting coming up on December 16th. I'm going to be downtown working, so I'm not able to go. I'd like to encourage somebody to go if they can. It's a Friday morning. It starts at 7:15, and we're out of there typically by 8:15. It's about an hour. And just a lot of really, as we talked about today with Representative Frank's bill that went down, you all got the LEND notice on the defeat of that bill. But I think, as Mike was telling us, that there are a lot of things we need to keep our, kind of touch point on. And that just greater involvement of board members, as Peg Agnos has asked, and Diane Berkeley, who's the co-chair for LEND from District 13 Bloomingdale, about wanting to get some more board involvement, even just attending a couple meetings a year, so that there can be a greater understanding of how LEND operates and supporting all that. So if anybody can make the December 16th meeting, that'd be great. And I just, on a personal thing, I watched the Golden Apple Awards the other night, Thursday night, on Channel 11. I happened to be flipping through. And I just want to read this quote, because I wrote it down, because I think it could be said by any one of the teachers in our district. This is was the 4th through 8th grade group of Golden Apple Fellows, and this was a teacher out of Edison School in Chicago Public School System, science teacher, who himself was a troublemaker, as he himself described, and said his father sitting in the audience couldn't believe that he was actually winning this award based on how much trouble he had all through school. So his name is Mark Hans, and he said, education is personal. It's in fact all about relationships. I go all in every single day because the kids deserve it, and it's the right thing to do. And when I heard him say that, I wrote it down, because I think that that could be said by any of the teachers or administrators in our district in terms of having that kind of energy. So the next round of Golden Apple Fellows is for K through third grade. So put that out there in public. People want to nominate people. It was really a cool program to watch. I made Carl watch it. So thank you. John, you want to talk about your visit?
Sure, I'd love to. I'm John Kenwood, and I attended the West Chicago visit. I don't know about the Barrington one, but I think the West Chicago one, they had two sections of it in the whole district. Mm-hmm. They had about six elementary buildings, and there were only two classrooms in this one building that did the dual program. It seemed to me that they were really trying to solve a problem of a lot of native Spanish-speaking people in the district. They targeted a roughly a 50-50 percentage, but realistically, a lot of the people that were in the classroom had some sort of connection culturally back to Spanish speaking. So, I mean, I thought it was a wonderful program. You know, math is done in Spanish all the way through, because you can pretty much do math in any language. And I thought it was a great program. Probably could be part of our solution here, but I didn't view it as so much as a foreign language problem the way they were addressing it for the whole school. It was really for a targeted group of folks and limited to a certain amount of folks. But overall, very good program, very important.
Thanks for joining.
I also had the pleasure of attending the Hadley parking lot discussion. Mm-hmm. With six other members of the community and four board members, I think.
I was one of those. Yeah.
It was four board members.
Okay. Nelson was there, that's four.
So we had a good ratio of board members to the community, and we learned a few things in the presentation.
Mm-hmm. From the community?
Yeah.
What did you learn?
We're going to talk about that coming up.
Would you like to table that, Steve?
Table one.
I attended the Churchill PTA meeting, which happened to be the same night as the parking lot meeting, and they talked about their jam-packed fall schedule, and so they're talking about how to spread some of those activities out so you're not working with the same set of volunteers. Also talked about their book fair and maybe changing a little bit about the way they do that. But one of the main things that they voted on was that they decided as a PTA, because of the way their budget was this year and funding that came in, revenues and expenses that one higher, one lower than they had anticipated, that they were going to give $500 to each grade level to use for either taking the class classes outside as a field trip or bringing a program in. And the catalyst to that was a grade level had requested some funds or asked for some funds to bring in a science program. And at the time that it was requested, they couldn't do it. And so they're going to look at being able to do something like that every year to be able to give that back. So that was really a great thing for them to be able to do. And they raised some parking lot issues with me that I will talk about when we get to that discussion. Mm-hmm. The other meeting I attended last Thursday was LLT, and I had forwarded both my Churchill report and the LLT points to Maureen to incorporate into our minutes. But we talked about the Common Core updates and the committee work that they did around math. And but one of the, you know, the piece I wanted to kind of really bring to the board's attention after a meeting that we had last year about learner characteristics, and I had shared that I was a bit disappointed that our staff, some of the staff members who were there, were not very aware of those learner characteristics. And since that time, they've done a lot of work on what are they, how do they work, and all of our meetings we've had these discussions about the learner characteristics. And one of the things that came out were they were all sharing stories, were given an opportunity to talk about are they seeing this year, or if there's some creative way they're implementing some of these learner characteristics into their daily lives with the kids. And one story that was really interesting, but the other outgrowth of the conversation was that how do we assess them? And many of these characteristics are just good character qualities. And Karen had shared an article that I don't know, Julie, I thought that we had gotten it because it looked really familiar to me, but if not, I'd ask that we, if you could pull it out again for us from the New York Times, and just about how schools look at character traits and how do we do that? How do you assess them? And some of them are things that you can't really give a letter or a number or a two, but you know it when you see it. Mm-hmm. And one of the stories that was shared was how one first grade teacher talked about how the children, when they come in the room, they're learning to make eye contact and shaking her hand and saying, "Good morning, Miss So-and-so." And she happens to be a teacher in this building. And she talked about how this one little girl who was so quiet most of the year kept following her around one day. And she looked at her and was like, what do you need and what's wrong? And she said, "Miss, good morning. And you didn't make eye contact with me. You didn't look at me." And she said it was something so simple as making sure that the kids make eye contact and shake your hand in the morning was something so small. How do you assess that? But that is something that she does with the kids, and that is a skill. Mm-hmm. That is a learner care, making, being engaged. And so, and she also shared a story about her math groups and how she's doing it. But it was something very simple, and talking about how to take these words and putting them into our classrooms, and just, something on the wall that become part of their everyday lives. It's a habit, and it's a skill that we're teaching, and people don't even know they're learning it, and they're not even sure how they're teaching it or how they're quantifying it, but that it is happening every day in our buildings. And it's more than a percentage, it's more than a letter grade, it's a life skill. Mm-hmm. So
excellent, thank you.
Great story.
I just had a quick look. Yeah, I went to Ben Franklin PTA, which nothing special. It was a pretty quick meeting. So, but I did want to give an update today. I had a question. I know Karen's not here. But they had the parent teacher conference at Glumbard, and I had a minute to talk to the department chair, the math department chair, Mr. Irvin. Mm-hmm. And he said there's about 14 student seniors taking the multivariate calculus at U of I. All the juniors, as juniors, they took Calc AB or BC. And did pretty well. I don't think they all went to take this class. But there were qualifications where the Glumbard teacher would have had to have a Master of Mathematics and then take some other exam that they would have to get like 90% to teach it.
Hmm.
But this way, to get certification, but they're still doing this for U of I. But Tanya DeGroote, who does have a Master of Mathematics, is sitting in this class and helping them go through lesson plans, but to get the college credit through the U of I, it has to be the correspondence course. So.
Interesting.
So, yeah, he said, you know, that there's fewer students than he thought they had hoped for, because I don't know how many freshmen started, you know, who had taken geometry as eighth graders, but
at least
there's something.
Yeah. You know. Good to know. Anything else? All right, last turn. Okay, discussion items. The 2012 Habby Parking Lot and Stormwater Project.
Well, you have had multiple opportunities to see this project and ask questions from Finance Committee on several occasions. It's been presented at Finance Committee. As was noted by John, we had a recent public meeting of the inviting neighbors and members of the community to join us for some information that Bob shared, as well as information that was presented by our architect, Ron Richardson, and the engineering firm. And about six people attended from the community, asked some good questions, and I think we provided good answers for them. You will note that while there are three recommendations, there are three options in your packet, the recommendation by administration is 5A and 1C, or C1, as the alternate. But because there had been a request to share information about above ground detention and what that would look like in a comparable setting, we've shared that with you as well, but it is not our recommendation.
So we're recommending the parking lot and the...
Well, we're recommending that we bid both of them. We recommend that we bid 5A and bid C1.
Part of the conversations that we were having at the Hadley PTA meeting, just to add, you know, again, was about safety and getting these buses off the street, and the, you know, organized chaos, as everyone has referred to it, needs to be improved. If we're going to do this project, it needs to be something that is long-term and that the safety of our kids is what is paramount. As far as I'm concerned, leaving these buses in this parking lot is unacceptable. C1 is not an alternate, in my opinion. We have to do this. For me, that's the bigger issue: is getting these buses off the parking lot. C1 is the part of this is the solution, and you know the reconfiguring of the parking lot is part of it. But getting those buses off the streets, out of the parking lot, improving traffic flow, but the paramount safety of our students, that's what's most important.
We had any incidents, anybody getting hurt at Hadley? Bus drop off?
Not since I've been here that I can recall. I mean, we've had little fender benders between cars and buses, which have not resulted in any injuries, just delay in getting kids home.
And do we feel, and there's a teacher out there directing traffic,
yeah,
too.
Right. And they're supervision out there.
Yeah. But no one's gotten hurt. Is C1 safer than dropping off in the parking lot? I mean, that's a fact, right? That
takes the buses out of the parking lot and lines them up along Glen Cove for drop off and pickup. So there's no commingling of cars and buses at all. This was a recommendation that actually the police department and the city of Wheaton asked us to take a look.
I think one of the things that the community members felt that night was, safety aside, they loved the idea that there would be a cutaway for the buses rather than on-street parking.
Yeah, for me, that was one of the lessons learned from the community, was the just the flow on that street. Mm-hmm. The buses don't stop there now.
They do after school.
After school, mm-hmm. So that's where they pick up.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a big lesson learned for me, because they seem to be impacted by that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we also concluded it's a, 15-minute window,
mm-hmm,
where that happens?
15 to 25 minutes, yes.
And then the stop signs coming out on the buses, that was another lesson learned that we made from the community members, that the buses would sit there and the stop sign might be out. And at least the one guy, mm-hmm, in the back felt that those stop signs are out and it, mm-hmm, stops traffic.
Too long.
Our generates ticket revenue.
If it wasn't there an option that with this option the buses wouldn't have to have the stop signs out, there'd be some sort of supervision where they could actually sit there and load the kids up without the option, without the...
I think we felt we had to investigate that because the stop sign out is a law. So whether or not, if you have a pull off, can that law be, you know, waived in any way during?
Are you actually on the road or off the road?
You know, I think I'm a little torn on, I think the other thing we learned, I was a little torn on two fronts. One was, it seemed like the village work really stops almost as it gets to our school. Mm-hmm. And, I sort of felt we were leveraging that work to make this more cost effective. And for me, I don't see how it's more cost effective because the work stops really when you get to the school. So it'd be nice to be able to explain that. I see how it's convenient in the sense that you're tearing up in that area and get it all done at once, but I didn't see the savings potential. So that's something we should probably understand better.
We don't know that we would have any savings because the ability and the interest of the village to go out for a joint bid might not be possible, which is where you would garner your potential savings. We did think that from an efficiency standpoint, time-wise, that you'd have the street tore up. You might have more efficiencies, which could create less costs in the end.
And I don't know if I have the time right, but I think this was on our plan in a couple of years, and we moved it up. Or was it always on the plan for next year?
I don't know that it was on the plan for yet next year, but certainly over the next couple of years.
Right.
But the way that the lot has deteriorated due to a number of conditions that are there, we decided to move it up this year.
Right.
A couple of reasons. We thought we might be able to garner some cost effectiveness because if we were to bid or the same contractor would be awarded, you would have excavators, you would have plumbers, you would have site work people right on, in the same immediate vicinity to be able to address those issues.
So, for me, that's still an open issue. And the other one I thought was interesting, and I don't know if you guys were able to follow up on this yet, but if Glencoe is really going to be torn up in 2 years, you remember that one resident was
the
saying,
city of Wheaton?
Yeah, that one resident was saying, hey, Wheaton's going to redo this street, which is where the buses go, and I was like, well, gee, to me, that's really where there's no choice but to get a savings because you're going to tear up the street and put that little C1 lot in at the same time. And I was like, well, that's definitely, there's got to be a benefit there.
Well, I tell you, we met for a couple, 3 hours with the city of Wheaton, and they never mentioned that this project was going to come up. They actually seemed to express some concern about being able to tie in the Hawthorne work, because there's some issues along there that started
right.
The city of Wheaton. So,
I don't know if you followed up after that meeting or the 2 or 3 hour meeting. Was that after our meeting or before?
Before, a month ago.
It would be nice for me just to follow up, just to understand if that's really on their roadmap or not.
I'll ask the question and get an answer.
Bob Minnick, the Public Works is he the director in Glen Ellen?
Mm-hmm.
Engineer. He wasn't able to be at the meeting on Tuesday night, but I did speak with the person that he sent.
He is the engineer that the village has hired to essentially plan these projects.
Right. So what he said to me, because I asked him the same question after it was done, John, because I was curious about that, about leveraging costs, etc. What he said is, in his experience with projects like this, is that it's more about the scheduling, which is what you just referred to, so that those contractors would know that these projects are going at the same time so they could schedule, and that could be a potential cost savings for both parties, both the village and the school. He said that's where the dollars can come out.
The village won't do any work until Hadley lets out the day after school. They won't be doing any work in the immediate vicinity of Hadley, and that's when we would essentially start this.
Right, because what they said was what Glenbard West starts as soon as the ground unfreezes, the end of March or something.
March.
It's going to start down at the end of the street.
No, it's going to start right around Main and Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's not down at
no.
the end there.
Oh, good. They can't get school started. That's crazy. School there now. They're going to have to do.
Oh, okay. So they're going to go like this versus yeah. that. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other things that was brought up that I thought, you know, was interesting is actually how much knowledge these particular neighbors that came had about drainage, ice problems, safety issues, watching our kids, as one person put it, you know, kind of slog through the mud. And, you know, I guess just an issue of care or concern about that. They also brought up the back lot. Someone brought up the back part of the back lot and that deterioration as well. So I share that only because we have neighbors in that area who are almost as aware or more aware, certainly, than any of us as board members, but as aware as you are of the way that drains and that, in fact, that retention does not take, as our engineer told us that night, the water off the parking lot. It doesn't do any of that. It simply takes rain that falls straight down into it. So there's not, you know, I think there's, I had the lack of understanding of what that retention actually did, and it does not do what our neighbors are saying need to be done, which is to really get the runoff from those portions of the driveway. The other thing I wanted to share with you is there was a lot of conversation around the parking lot at Hadley when I was when my daughter was at Hadley 5 years ago now. Starting with one of the first Hadley PTA presidents that I knew back in 07 and 08, and large concerns about drop-off and pick-up back then. And at the time, they put the PTA put a map together, actually, of the pick-up and drop-off. You probably remember this, Phyllis. Put it in the Hadley Happenings, had a big parent meeting. And I don't know, I'd have to ask Jean this, but I don't know if it was because there was some kind of incident or just this real concern of the what we're talking about, which is this kind of pinball experience you have when you drive in there. So I'm sharing that just because we're coming into this conversation now in terms of looking to go out to bid, but the conversation around this in terms of commingling, as one of the residents put it last Tuesday night, of buses not being a good idea, has a lot of history. It's not a brand new conversation that we're having. The other thing that they did, which we now have, is that staff was not outside at the time, and now Dr. Dranzoff, Matt Edelman is the king of traffic out there, but teachers routinely are out there to help move traffic along, which definitely has helped. The other person I talked to was Marge Delarusso, who was PTA president and also part of PTA Council Safety Committee, and she said her big issue was around ice and snow buildup along Hawthorne. They actually went to the village board to request that. This was 08-09. So they had actually gone to the village to share their concern because there was a point in time at which when residents weren't shoveling, PTA members were going out to shovel and put ice melt down. I do remember that because they called me to do it one morning. The village was not going to change the ordinance. They didn't do that. The board?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah, to come in. That's right.
That was a big issue.
That was a big issue for a while. So, you know, the last thing she talked about is that when the referendum to add on to Hadley, there was conversation at the time also about reworking the parking lot in order to separate out buses and cars. So, again, I want to just share that kind of historical perspective so that we understand that there's been many more residents talking about this than just the six or seven who were there Tuesday night or, you know, any of the emails or whatever that we may have gotten in that.
Bob, is the Glenco side, is that considered Wheaton or is that considered
Wheaton?
Okay. The trees that are in the parkway, will we...
Those will be relocated inside the fence.
But anymore, did the city of Wheaton contribute to the trees because they're parkway trees?
I don't know. I don't know anyone that would know that question.
Well, is it more because it's owned by? I mean, the parkway is usually owned by the village.
Right. And typically,
we need them permission to move that. Those.
Right.
They didn't say anything about it. They were happy with our plan.
Okay.
Because we did indicate that we wouldn't be losing those trees, but rather relocating them within our fence line.
So that was the question regarding ongoing landscaping. Because that was an issue, but we addressed it when we gave our presentation.
Because typically when there's a parkway tree, the city or the village pays half the cost of installing that tree. I don't know how that was structured, but that's what I'd say.
I guess I would like to still see us go out to bid on option 15 and I guess a few different things that I've been thinking about to go through. When I look at the traffic flow pattern, I guess I like 15 better than 5A. 5A still has some car parking place that's near where the through cars are dropping off at.
Mm-hmm.
Versus 15, I mean, it seems like there's a little better configuration.
Where, I'm sorry, Dan, where is that again? I'm looking at 15.
15's traffic flow.
Okay.
Right, 15's traffic flow versus 5A. You have that one, you know, the 15 has the one-way flow through. So you don't, versus the 5A has both ways. So you don't have cars trying to go back and forth. But, you know, it's more efficient than moving traffic through because it's going one way. And then also, you know, with the 15, since you're keeping the existing detention and you're not drastically changing the elevation or the drainage patterns of the existing parking lot, that's why you're able to leave the existing detention as is. So that means a couple different things. One, it means less, you're doing less ground moving there.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in my mind, I see that as less disruption to the neighborhood, especially if they're not working on Rockbar or Glencoe right in that area. And then also, from our previous finance packets, we have seen there was a cost delta. I think it was around $350,000 cheaper to use the option 15 versus the option 5A. Now, I understand there's some concerns with the buses being able to turn in, but if we do take that alternate, then that is not an issue.
You mean add C1 onto this?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, just looking at it from that standpoint, I'd rather see us take that capital dollars and use it towards more projects or more classrooms, you know, 21st century classrooms. You know, get better use out of our dollars than putting in some of the detention.
Mm-hmm. So your request is to do bid all three?
Right.
Okay.
I guess, you know, my thought is, I don't know how much time this is going to take from the administrative perspective, and we all want to go out to bid, and, you know, it's not going to suck up a bunch of your time, that's fine. You know, I'm just, after attending, and maybe I have a dollar in my mind that maybe it's a lot more than what it's going to take, but it just seems to me that given seeing the $4 million, $4 million, and $8 million spreadsheet, you know, is this something we say, I'd rather invest money in classrooms and 21st century than to do this. I mean, it's a thought in my mind, so I'm sharing with everybody else.
But that's not what we're discussing. We're discussing which options to bid.
Do what?
We're discussing which options to bid.
Right, but I mean, that. You know,
so you're suggesting not to,
you're saying not to do the parking lot at all.
I mean, you know, I went to a meeting, right? You were there, Bob was there, Phyllis was there. I mean, a lot of people, I was like, sitting there going, man, there's a lot of people's time involved in this. And I don't know what's happening behind the scenes, right? I mean, you were there. And I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. 20 times more work, you know, of all that. And so.
To do what?
I mean, at some point we're going to have to do something to that parking lot.
Yep.
So it's either, so the process and the time involved would have to occur at some point, regardless.
Yeah, and for me it was just priority.
Question of whether it's
21st century. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, you've put this
spent with regards to developing these proposals now. Now is the time we need to make a decision. Do we want to bid 5A, do we want to bid C1, or do we want to bid 15?
Or all three?
Well, that's great, but I think that will probably involve more engineering time because we would have to complete more engineering and architectural time because they'll have to do essentially the double the work by creating bid packs for 5A and 15. So you're telling me we're going to run into some additional spending.
So you're telling me that potentially some of the cost savings we would have for 15 could potentially be eaten up by engineering and architectural plans? I mean, I don't know what the cost of that kind of stuff.
I don't know what the cost would be for preparing two sets of bid docs, but yes, that potential exists because I committed to spending, I think, $15,000 just to essentially evaluate the stormwater and underground storage vault. Now, if we come in and we are developing two different bid packs, I'm kind of assuming that the engineering work is going to double. Certainly the architectural work involving reviewing both proposals and then all our options, and then also preparing the bid packets, which are pretty substantial.
So instead of the 15,000, what ballpark would it be?
I think it might go 25 to 30.
If you bid all three?
Yeah. Well, the way it would be bid now would be 5A and C1, or 5A, C1, and 15 and C1.
And C1 can be done independently. I mean, if we decide we want to spend more on 21st century, we could get C1, get the buses off the road, have a single drop-on and drop-off without doing 5A, right? Is that a correct statement or not a correct statement?
Well, I don't know that you'll have as great of contractor participation on a several hundred thousand dollar project versus maybe $150,000 or $175,000 project. So that's the difference you might see there.
Mm-hmm. But you could do it, though.
I could do almost anything.
Yeah.
It's just how do you want to go out to bid? Because we are now, we've taken several meetings to review this, and we're kind of...
You're waiting for us.
Because we have to hold meetings with the village of Glen Allen, with the city of Wheaton. We need to get bid packets prepared. Mm-hmm. I mean, all this, we're typically releasing bid packets by the middle of December, and that allows us to get on the street early. And as we've experienced over the past several years, we believe that's given a significant cost reduction. Because if you looked at our bids over the past couple of years, you'll find $300,000-$500,000 spread between the lowest bid and the highest. So one of the reasons we assume that is because we're essentially the first ones out on the street. The village doesn't get out that early. The other districts simply don't get out that early. We start the process earlier in the fiscal year, and we believe that gives us some financial firepower, if you will.
Do you know for sure the county said that if you just keep the existing detention, they're fine? If you dig up the rest of the parking lot, they're not going to come in and say, now that you've touched it, here's new requirements.
I have concerns that if we substantially change, which we will be doing, substantially changing this lot, it could throw us into a stormwater calculation.
Right.
And that means we would have to provide for detention somewhere, above ground or below ground.
Steve, I asked the engineers at the meeting afterwards, because I was confused, because he said the underground stormwater can hold 55,000 gallons, but the above ground is 5,000, so I was like, that doesn't make sense. And so he said, if you don't change the drainage patterns, then you don't have to accommodate it when you redo it. So as long as you do the work so that you don't change the drainage patterns.
But it's only somebody in the county that decides that, right?
But isn't that the point in wanting to make these improvements, because the drainage patterns are creating these other, ice in the street at the corner of Hawthorne and Glencoe? I mean, just drive by tonight and you see the flow from the rain we had.
Essentially, what's occurring now is we're not accepting stormwater on our own property, our rent runoff. We're allowing it just to sort of flow in the city system.
Yeah.
But that was the thought behind 5A, is that we would relieve issues that have come to our attention over the years with the neighborhood and address these issues. Because, as we said, this is a project that probably only comes up every 15 or 20 years. So if you're going to do this project, why not look at it from a long-term perspective, address stormwater issues, bus traffic and car traffic, sightline issues, student and vehicle safety, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what's driven this entire conversation out of comments that we've heard from the village, from the city of Wheaton, from our administrators in the building, from the parents, from the neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Bob, the city and the village, have they given you an indication if they would prefer the above the ground detention as opposed to the below?
I met with Stacy and Michelle last week, and although they're not going to take a position on it publicly, as we did not take a position on expanding or widening Hawthorne, they told me privately that they would hope that any retention that we provide would be below ground on this piece of property. That's what their wishes are to see at the Hadley site.
And you get the same indication from the Wheaton people?
I would say we've got the same indication from the Wheaton people as we have to the from the Glen Ellen people, because we're not currently managing the water that's coming from our site. With this 5A proposal, we would be managing.
And then would that allow us to do additional things on the Hadley site because you've got excess detention?
You know, and I'm not going to say that we can do a 10 or 20,000 foot addition without having to take a look at stormwater again, but we'll certainly address issues that are currently existing in the property.
So we have this back up for discussion on November 28th.
We have it for action on November 28th. It's discussion.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I read that wrong.
But again, we had a meeting to get community input, and it sounds like overwhelmingly the community input was do something about water runoff.
Those were my notes. Those were.
Project, right? Well, someone asked the cost.
No, the cost. Yeah, I mean.
But it was not.
We couldn't share the cost because we didn't have it, but there was, I mean, the people I was with, they were definitely interested in the cost and even mm-hmm. the difference between above ground and underground, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, that was at least three of the people there.
Bob did give a number. I mean, you did share kind of a high level. I don't...
The thought I could say, they said, what is the projected cost of this project? And it has been in many board reports, is that the 5A option is about for $900,000, which includes $100,000 in allowances, and a project along Glencoe is about $175,000 project.
And you've included this in the budget. This has been in the capital budget.
Well, it's been in the capital budget. It'll be included in next year's
correct
budget, fiscal year budget.
But this is money that you've earmarked for improvements to that property.
This is what I earmarked for the coming fiscal year.
As a one-time payment, or is it over time?
It's a one-time payment that we pay the contractors. And I just like for you to keep in mind, I realize it's a huge chunk of money. We essentially spent almost that much money when we did the Franklin project.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that project, amortize it over 15 or 20 years with essentially never having to do any work except minor, you know, repairs, keeping it up to date, keeping your seal coating and striping and everything else up to date. We estimate these lots to last 15 to 20 years, and that's the way they're constructed. So when you look at a project over a 10, 15, 20-year period, I know it's a big chunk of money at once, but it's not that significant when you look at it over a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at, I came here 5 years ago, we had nothing but complaints on the neighborhood around Franklin, and the flooding that, quote unquote, the Hadley site was creating, and we have not received a single complaint in 3 years, and we have had significant weather events over the past 3 years. That certainly would have given us some rather significant neighborhood flooding.
Did any? I don't see, Eric, I don't remember anyone at the meeting saying that they had some runoff issues from the parking lot. I recall them describing runoff from the back or runoff near the portable, I don't recall.
There was what the
there
was a couple behind, like they were two rows behind me. It was a couple, and she made a joke about over a century ago dropping her kids off there. You know that she'd been a parent there, and they talked about the runoff that creates, you know, kind of a muddy section with the rain, but ice because he's walks his dog there every day, basically. So he talked about it's that corner, I'm terrible with my directions, but it's the corner of Hawthorne and Glencoe, that corner that runs off, and there is an ice flow that kind of occurs there. I think that that's what he was talking about, is that there's this natural collecting point because there's nothing to capture it. So that's what I heard him say.
He did
talk about that a lot in the back, though, Dan, you're right.
The way I interpreted his comment,
mm-hmm.
I don't know the area that well, the way I interpreted his comment was not on the corner there, it was up on the sidewalk north of the parking lot.
He did talk about that, yes.
Yeah,
where he saw the kids getting in and out of the buses.
The water that starts to pile up and then it freezes, which then I started saying, well, great, if we're going to drop the kids off on the street, then it's going to be more of a safety hazard because they're going to fall on the ice. But then his wife said, well, because then Bob said, well, you had done some work up by the portables and considerable amount
with the
of work.
New construction, yeah.
And then his wife said, yeah, you know, it is a lot better now. So I couldn't tell if his comment was 5, 10 years ago versus now. They acknowledge it was better, but I didn't pick up that there was an issue in the corner of the street where you're saying.
That's.
But I don't know the area, so
yeah.
I'm just telling you what I heard.
Yeah.
You could be absolutely 100% right.
And bottom line was, I was impressed that the neighbors had such a sensitivity to the issues that are there and how they're impacted by it.
Which is part of the process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, is it... Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
I just had a quick question for Bob. I know you've got cost numbers for the 7A option. Do you have cost numbers for the option 15?
I think what I gave you were one-for-one replacement options. We didn't go as far as to develop 15 because it involved additional engineering study. The one-for-one replacement, there's about a $300,000 difference between 5A and then just a one-for-one replacement.
Okay, so we're talking about $300,000.
You're talking You're talking about $250,000 to $300,000 to bury that detention.
I'd like to suggest that we do a little investigation around cost and time to do all three for bid, and we'll make an administrative decision about that and bring back our best recommendation and what we think is, you know, most cost effective, easiest to do, most our best recommendation for the total project, and let you take action on that. Is that
on the
28th?
On the 28th.
One other comment. When I went to the village and spoke with them last week, they asked me, because I had sat in a number of meetings where they had a traffic expert that came in and did an analysis for us about what was going to occur on Hawthorne. I met with the firm that did that traffic study, and they're supposed to give you some just a quick one or two page report in terms of what they think would be the best option to address traffic flow in and out of this lot.
Yeah.
I expect that report Wednesday or Thursday of this week.
Great.
To your point, and I would also add, though, just understanding if Glencoe is really on the roadmap.
Yeah, we'll get that question answered.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, everyone. Okay. Next item is the fiscal philosophy, policy, and procedures. And
I wanted to just make a note. It's, you know, it's getting pretty late. I don't know if we want to allow staff who don't wish to remain, if they might want it. Nancy has to stay, obviously. But,
yes. Good night.
If they wish to.
Thank you
for
being
here. If they wish to, give them an option to leave.
Yeah.
Do we have a closed session?
No. But I don't know how much time you're going to spend on these next two items.
Right. So I was just gauging my own.
We're all getting a little loopy.
Are you suggesting moving this discussion?
No. I was just suggesting that if staff, if it's getting to be 10:30, if they wish to close up for the evening, if board members didn't mind.
Not at all. Thank you. Good night.
You may want to stay. I mean, that's fine. You have the right. I just want to make sure that.
Thank you.
Suggesting that. Yeah.
Oh, Mike, you have to stay too, though.
No, Mike doesn't have to stay. Nancy does, though.
No, Sam, you may not. Get out your coat.
Okay.
This next item, fiscal philosophy, policy, and procedures. I sat in on finance committee tonight, and Tara came for part of that as well. And we did have some discussion around this, and I was at Ann's suggestion, which I think is a good one to have Finance Committee give a high-level summary. Drew, I'll turn to you to do that, and then Dan
and Steve. Oh my gosh, there was a lot of discussion, so I'll try and
summarize it.
Hit the highlights. One of the issues was instead of having a hard number on page 0.5, which is the 33%, that we should have a range. There was discussion about that. Then there was further discussion of, you know, does it make sense to put some of the hypothetical concepts that are listed here underneath toward the bottom of 61 and 62, and then the final concept was this is structured as a AP, this fiscal philosophy, and there was a question if the fiscal fiscal philosophy should be not a AP but a board policy, and that's kind of where we left it when we finished up in finance. I think the concept was we're going to bring it back to finance and basically have a discussion to see if it makes sense to have it as a board policy or an AP, and then rush through these other issues once we've made that determination.
Mm-hmm.
And jump in if I'm missing anything.
No, I think that's. I
understand the last point about making it a policy or a...
Let me go to Dan, because he brought that question up.
Well, there was a discussion around typically the AP or the administration procedures are typically work documents or instructions that help guide the administration and enforcement of a policy, not really the policy itself. And so as we began to talk about this, I raised the question of, well, maybe this should be a policy instead of an AP, because the conversation kind of drifted to, this is administration work, we really shouldn't be dictating this. And it's like, okay, well, as a board we set policy, so maybe we should set it as policy instead. So I think you would still see some similar parameters or lines that you see from this AP, but the last thought we talked about was we should have it in the policy instead of as an AP.
So the idea is, while this started in policy committee, pardon me, and Sam and I met and discussed this and did talk a little bit about should this be a hard number, should it not, the idea behind this, based on conversation literally from 2 years ago, was to develop a policy, a procedure, an AP, that would serve to identify what the triggers were when a range, whatever it is, was hit, what that triggered, and it triggered a conversation around what to do with fund balance. And so there's continued discussion around whether or not it's number one, to Dan's point and question, in the right place. Is this a policy versus an administrative procedure? And should it be as defined as it is? And if not, what should it look like? And I know, and I would add my two cents back to finance would be, please help me understand what this is intending to do, and some direction on that. Because my sense was when we got to this point, we were addressing some of those issues, but as we talked about them, maybe not.
Yeah, because there was, you know, we were talking about some length. There's two cornerstones in this policy. One is, what should your fund balance be? And then how do we define that? And the other part is, what should you do with, or what should reserves be used for?
Well, when you say what should the fund balance be, are you talking about a number then?
Right, a percentage. One's been thrown.
So that's the range idea that...
Well, that was, we've had a number thrown out by the administration. I guess I have some different ideas. I'd like to hear some other people's ideas as well.
What are your ideas?
My idea, I guess when I look at it, I look at it from the standpoint of what revenue is volatile. Currently, our property taxes are around 99% paid. And so then you look at the remaining, I believe it was 11% is left, but a portion of that is, you know, bond interest and some other monies that we receive. So I would look at, what if we lose those, you know, are they reduced significantly? You know, i.e. federal dollars or state dollars that get reduced. And then when I look at that, I say, okay, if that's 11%, I'm being fairly conservative, and I hated to fund that for a couple of years, what percentage would that be? So, you know, I'm looking at like the 5% range as a more, you know, a number somewhere between the 20 and 25%. And based on, so if you lose those dollars, then you can dip into the reserves to recover those while you work on a plan that gets you back to the higher end of that range.
Well, I think we all got email from Bob Solak with some commentary on this. He couldn't be here, but asked that, you know, we acknowledge that. And I think that some of, I read it high level because it came at 5:30, but my sense is that he's talking about some of the things he brought up on the board last year as well. So in line a little bit with what you're saying too, Dan. So you're saying you're back to a number, but again, kind of a range, and a range that's lower than this 33%, so that we're actually, you know, we're triggering it at a little different level and then deciding what
right.
the conversation is based on.
Right, and it still keeps us within the boundaries that give us the, you know, positive rating for bonding and everything.
Well, I'd want to make sure I would defer back to Bob about that, because I know that the financial profile piece, you know, I know that sometimes that scene is kind of the template, and it's a you know, a one size fits all potentially. But I would want to know from your perspective, you know, how that you think that might impact us.
Yeah. There was one other issue, is that how do we define the reserves? I think Bob had a very good definition for the reserves that we should probably incorporate into whatever form this policy takes.
Oh, that the date, that
the actual date,
and then the definition of how it's calculated.
Fully accrual, yeah, the fully accrual. So the idea behind this is to send this back to finance, so we can filter those discussions in and have them come back to us and reread it. Review it, and then make a decision.
So the hits were a range.
And then
a definition.
Yeah, and then there was some discussion about eliminating number three.
What's number alter. Three?
Well, three
circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt we were making this complicated.
Yeah, I don't think we should be setting a policy on things the board votes on anyway. I mean, policies cover actions, other mm-hmm. things, you know.
And that they're situational, like you said.
Do, things like that. But, I mean, the board has to vote on these things anyway. The policy doesn't really mean anything. It's not going to, I think, receive the vote. I don't think it's going to cause the administration to act any differently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other thing, too, is for me, I think in the old language, a balanced budget should be presented every year. There should be no exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the balanced budget, but that means we, you know,
you mean a budget without a deficit.
We don't deficit spend.
Do you want a budget without a surplus? Are you saying we have to find ways to spend money and balance it so that the revenues equal expenses?
No, the way I interpreted this is that if there was a one-time expenditure, then we could go into a deficit spending year. And what I'm saying is, to me, that's a board that makes that decision. So just tell us, here's a balanced budget, but to get there and do this project, it means you got to do this,
mm-hmm.
and we'll say okay, yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
I felt this was just making it more complicated. Of it's got to be a balanced budget, except this and that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it was like that's part of the board action, and I don't know that needs to be a part of this. We'll decide that, and we'll have the back and forth around.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's, you know, I mean, that's what I felt.
Same with these, you know, if the fund balances are reduced, and that's, to me, all discussions we're going to have. Mm-hmm. I think the key thing for me was around, you know, what percentage does this at least, at a minimum, trigger a conversation? And
and did you have another percentage that you wanted to suggest?
I've been anywhere between 15 and 25%. So, you know, could I live in the 20, 25%? Probably. I don't care. I mean, I shouldn't say it this way, so I won't. The financial rating, to me, is not a critical driver because our revenues are so secure that for someone not to want to lend us money, they probably wouldn't have a very strong financial or banking background based on the security of our revenues. And if they wouldn't, then to me, something's so catastrophic has occurred that the model has changed,
mm-hmm.
right? Something kind of like what they're doing now with potentially refinancing homes and giving you a better rate regardless of the value of the asset. The model just,
bless you. Thank you.
There's a catastrophe, the model changes, and that's not anything mm-hmm. any of us can anticipate. Mm-hmm. So for me, that is not as relevant, mm-hmm. the school funding, given our source of revenue comes from the local residents, and it's pretty secure revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the only other piece I would add is we as board members are putting out numbers, and I would defer to ask Bob and Phyllis based on, what you see as needed dollars to have in case of a crisis, whatever it might be. You live with us every day. We don't. So I would want your best advice on that.
So the administrative procedure versus the policy, are we saying that we're leaving the policy, the 420 policy, as it is? Or are we still in the discussion of is it going to be a policy or is it going to be an AP? Are we still...
Sounds like you're still in discussion on
still
that.
In that discussion.
And that finance will kind of wrestle with that and then bring it back to you as a recommendation.
Yeah. Bob, based on this AP, based on the PMA numbers, we need to do something because our fund balance is exceeding what the policy calls for, correct?
It's a ratio to revenues. Mm-hmm. So we have to calculate the ratio you saw on this presentation.
Yeah, he did to revenues.
Instead of
expenditures. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different calculation that has to be done to.
Yeah, so it may not be.
Verify that.
I think it was pretty close.
It may very well be. I just want everybody to understand that was the ratio that was calculated based on a different value.
Yeah.
Okay.
And basically, we don't have to do anything, Drew, until there's
a policy
or direction from the board to do so.
Right.
No, I understand.
I did that little calculation on my BlackBerry. It was a little. It was 37.4 versus 37. I'm no mathematician, but I think that's.
Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, I'm just thinking out loud, so mm-hmm. I may change my opinion. I reserve the right to do so. But, you know, and then if we exceed it, you know, to me, it's a trigger that says let's have a discussion, but not, mm-hmm. okay, you got to do this, and this, if it exceeds, because maybe that's part of the strategy at the point, because something is coming up, and the board should be able to discuss that, not handcuff it. So, I just felt we were making this.
Too complicated. Well, I think in writing this, we were trying to. Some of the previous discussions were mm-hmm. we need to have a menu of ideas of what it would be mm-hmm. used for. And so
it was response to let's show due diligence to the community that we're thinking these things through, that everything's on the table, whether it's resources or abatement or whatever it might be. So that was, you know, to just give context to where it's ended up here. If we want to pull back, that's great. But understand why we ended up here. So
we can simplify that too.
Yep. Thank you.
I just have one very nitpicky thing mm-hmm. around the second one where it would say maintain and update to best serve the learning needs. I just say to serve the learning needs. To best serve may have other implications that we're not.
Excellent.
Like an iPad for every kid. That's the best way. It may be.
We could say best serve the learning needs within the financial constraints.
Yeah, that's fine. I just don't want to force it into a Cadillac or anything like that.
Anything else?
Do you feel that that's the case? I mean, that's my whole point.
It's a sort of document that'll carry on.
Every district's different. Fund balance is just part of the equation.
Right. Well, thank you, Finance, for taking us back, and thank you to Bob and Phyllis for taking a look at it as well. Last item there, about board policy revisions.
The policy for revisions that have been recommended for Section 8 are first reading, and what I'd like to note just generally about those policy changes, there are very few of them, and most of them really range in the area of trying to articulate more specifically what kinds of groups might be served by, you know, a communication strategy. There were no compliance in Section 8, but you do have two policies that are a part of this approval, Policy 650 and Policy 7230, that were, in fact, compliance language changes that we needed to make. So generally speaking, we tried to create greater clarity around what we actually do in terms of community relations and how our procedures, what procedures we use to work with the community. And so that's your first reading on Section 8, which I want to thank Dan and Erica and Sam, who all laid eyes on that section.
Hey Dan, we may send you Section 4 again just in a few more times. Thank you very much.
I just had one quick comment.
Sure.
And it was, I just remember whenever we had phone numbers in here, we changed them all to the general number so that as people's phone numbers changed, they didn't have to update them.
Right.
870 has.
But I thought, we can do that. We can change that to a general number. Because it was complaint managers, I don't know why I was thinking maybe they needed to be specific. Okay.
I don't know where you are, but
policy 84.
No, I still wouldn't be able to find it, but an email too might be a good thing.
18-4 and
mm-hmm. If there's an email, but we don't have general. Do we have a general email?
No, you'd have to put the person in there then.
Yeah.
We don't have a general email. We don't have a harassment line email set up.
It's called the master support.
Just a thought. It might mean easier to manage than a phone.
Right, but we don't.
It's just a thought. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
It's not going to work.
I did have a question, though, since you used the word harassment. You know, it's all hindsight stuff, but everything that's happening at the certain college.
Mm-hmm.
There's a process in place that if a kid is taken out of school by someone other than their parents, there's a process that's authorized.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just amazed at some of the lack of processes around, you know, kids being taken out of school and stuff. So that process exists.
Correct. And we do have mandated, Lori just sent an email out today about mandated reporting and the requirements that we have, you know, as mandated reporters, and it's on our ad team agenda, mm-hmm. just for a reminder.
Yeah.
But actually, I believe school board members are.
You are, but you are mandated to report. You would report to me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to call DCFS. Yeah.
I just sat through a legal conference on that issue, and I would check with our legal counsel because that was communicated in a very different way to us.
Was it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's not our
attorney. So,
Well, and to your point, John, I think that's why this you know policy and being on this cycle of really looking at every section and really going through a fine-tooth comb. I want to thank Lori, who's not here, but in public, for all the work she did, especially in that section that you're referring to last year, because it needed a lot of cleanup, personnel, remember.
Yeah, and for me, it's more about the process and the policy, just because.
Well, the APs that are associated with it, though, right?
Those.
Yeah, but that's a big part of it because the administrative procedures are old.
We would highly discourage it under any circumstance, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Upcoming meetings of the board include November 28th, 2011, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office.
December 12th, 2011, public hearing on the 2011 levy at 7:15, Central Services Office. December 12th, 2011, Board of Education regular meeting at 7:20 p.m. or immediately following the public hearing at the Central Services Office. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board? As there are no members of the public present, there is no public participation. The board has determined that it does not have a need to adjourn to closed session. May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Motion to Mr. Kenwood, second to Mr. Black. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you, Bob.